Actually, I am going to take a bathroom break, but okay, you can keep talking because...
Because you don't care.
Well, I mean, I don't talk that much anyway, so no one will notice me missing for 2 minutes.
Gotcha.
That's 2 minutes. Okay.
Sorry, let me just look at one little thing here.
Google Coke, whore, and retro. And Spangenberg.
That's gonna be the wow. intro stinger or whatever.
That's
make it the title of the episode.
All right, so let's move on. Welcome to the Negative World Podcast, a podcast about video games by the Nintendo fans at negativeworld.org. This is episode 35, and we are recording this on Tuesday, July 24th, 2012. I am your host, Joe, or as I'm known on the boards, Ninsage. Dr. Finkelstein has some important matters to take care of, and so I am going to be hosting solo this episode. But with me today, I do have my friends, Anand.
My name is Anand, and I'm from the Negative World boards, and we also have...
Andrew, also known as Zero.
Cool. Later we're going to be talking with both of them about their recent Wii U experience at an event they attended on Saturday. And we're also going to be asking them about the recent Negative World meetup in Montreal last week. But first, we're going to get into Now Playing. So, Anand, what have you been playing lately?
Well, I haven't been playing too much since I just went to that meetup and we pretty much, like, gained 20 out of every 24 hours. Or maybe 24 hours out of every 24 hours. And I guess we'll talk more about those games later. Aside from that, I haven't been playing too much except the demo for Spelunky on Xbox 360, which is pretty fun. I was looking forward to that for a while. It's like a randomly generated platformer.
So it's
like kind of a roguelike platformer, and that concept sort of fascinates me. I like to talk about roguelikes at least once per time I'm on.
Yeah.
Do you guys know what they are?
Yeah. Well, I know the general concept. All that I really know is that it's sort of, they're usually randomly generated, and there's usually some sort of like severe penalty for dying.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah.
And it's like exploration based too.
Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of like every time you play it's something different, and that concept, even if it's not always pulled off perfectly, it just fascinates me. Like the promise of the eternal game, you know?
Uh-huh.
So I'm excited for that game. And, aside from that, I've been playing, Pilot Wings on the 3DS. Did you guys finish that? Or do you guys have that game?
I never got that one.
It was actually $5, like yesterday, I think.
Are you serious?
Yeah, so you probably should have picked it up then.
Pick it up for that price, yeah.
Yeah. That's actually a fun game. Like the first time I played it, I only played it for a couple minutes and kind of put it away. But, you know, digging into it more, it's very well done. It doesn't really have any new courses or anything because it uses Woohoo Island, but they give you a pretty good variety of tasks to do in there. I think it's still a little too hard to get perfect scores, you know, because it's all based on your landing and stuff like that. But overall, I like the game a lot. And, even though they're probably never going to make another one because I think it totally flopped.
Like, even though it was like launch title and stuff?
Well, a launch title means it should have sold regardless, right?
Like, right,
I don't think it did that well, like Nintendogs and that. Well, at least judging by the fact it was $5 the other day, I don't think it did that well. But so that's a fun game. And I also played on Wii, I got from the library like an Elmo game, which I'm not going to talk about. And for my nephews, and two game show games, which I'm briefly going to talk about, which supported Wii Speak, actually. And they were Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune. And the Wii Speak support was just atrocious, just totally awful. I was wondering, I was like, how are they going to pull this off? And the answer is that they totally didn't. It's like
they didn't at all.
Yeah. Like other people can just grief you by calling out random letters or ringing in you. You know, like when you complete the word, it might put in the wrong thing or something. It was pretty horrible. And the Wheel of Fortune game.
It's supposed to be just like a voice recognition for like a one player or like one household experience.
Yeah, for one household experience. So everybody gets the same thing. And you basically rung in, but then you could do everything else with your voice. It was just really clunky. You know, it gives me bad premonitions for a Kinect future when everyone's getting voice activated. But maybe the Wii isn't also powerful enough because you need a certain amount of power to do voice command. Otherwise, it could have done more on the DS and 3DS and stuff like that. But, you know, just in brief, Wheel of Fortune was shitty, and Jeopardy was actually pretty good, except for the voice commands.
Okay. What was the, difficulty level? Were you able to have, like, adult-level questions, or was it, like... Set up for little kids.
You have a personal interest in Jeopardy, right? There were a wide variety of difficulties, and most of them were actually pretty decent, pretty reasonable, except for the Judeo-Christian bent, which is actually true to the real-life Jeopardy, which always annoys me.
Interesting.
That and the sporting questions always kind of screw me over in those trivia things. But yeah, it was pretty good. I would recommend it if you can find it cheap and you don't plug in your WeSpeak at all. I would not recommend that.
You know, just real quick on Pilot Wings, I loved the flying bits in Wii Sports Resort, and I played it. I got 100% of all the little achievements or whatever they are. If I liked that, would I like Pilot Wings?
Well, you are in luck.
The 3DS one.
Yeah, you're in luck because that exact same experience has moved over to the 3DS. There's like a free flight mode. Yeah, you can do it all over again in 3D. There's like a free flight mode where you can do basically the same thing. I think they add some stuff or maybe subtract some stuff, and it has that same mode, but then they have the mission mode also. And Andrew, you actually have Pilot Wings too, right? Did you finish it?
Yeah, I finished it. I got medals on, I think, every course. The platinum or whatever the highest medal is, that's like one before the perfect score.
Oh yeah, gold, I think.
Yeah, so yeah, I played it a lot. I think it was a really good game, and especially it's $5 now at Best Buy. I mean, maybe not by the time this podcast is edited and released, but it is well worth recording. So Stefan in chat actually asked me, or Steven, I should say, sorry, in chat asked me, oh, is it worth $5? And he's like the Halo, you know, Xbox guy. I'm like, dude, $5. Go buy it.
If it's really $5, like tomorrow, I will go pick it up because that, I mean, I kind of wanted that game. It came out, you know, before I even had a 3DS, obviously. But, yeah, it looked pretty good for at least what the selection was at launch.
It is pretty good. What do you guys think about Monster Games in general? They did, like, Excitebike and Excitebike, or Excitetruck, Excitebots, and Excitebike World Rally, I guess. Do you guys think they're, like, a valuable second party? Do you think they'll do F-Zero or something?
The only one of those I played was World Rally, which I liked very much, but that's a very simple game, so it's tough to really judge.
I have Excite Bots, but I think I played it once. It's not even like that I didn't like it. I just kind of bought it because it was like $5 or something, and I wasn't ready to have a new game, and so it's sitting in my like yet to play pile. So I can't really comment too much on that.
I think they're pretty good, but I think they've had kind of like a low degree of difficulty so far. Like, you know, Pilot Wings, they didn't even make their own new course or whatever. People are suggesting them as a possible for F-Zero. Like, maybe that's what they're working on. And it's one of the second parties that Nintendo has actually been sticking with in recent times, you know? Monster Games, and also the next level games that made Punch-Out. And so it's one of those Western third parties that Nintendo really likes to work with. I think they have a pretty good future. I don't know about F-Zero, though.
Could make sense if they've done so many racing-type games, or at least driving-type games.
It's true. The problem is that, you know, the Excite games are kind of loose on purpose because they're based around motion control, and F-Zero has to be, you know, super, super tight.
Precise, yeah. All right, cool. Well, Zero, what have you been playing lately?
Well, I was also at the Montreal thing, so at Montreal, I played like 8,000 games, but we'll talk about that later. At home, I have been playing Radiant Historia, which is the RPG on the DS that it kind of has. I don't know if you guys have played this game.
I haven't
played it, but I looked into it. It seemed really interesting. But then when I sort of was at the point deciding whether or not I would buy it, I just like I could not wrap my head around the time manipulation thing.
Well,
so
I've had this like up and down experience, emotional experience, like kind of first I loved it, then I was like, well, I'm not sure if I like this game, and back and forth. But the time thing, it doesn't actually, when I imagined this game before I actually bought it, I was thinking of like Link to the Past, or maybe not Link to the Past because that's not time, like Ocarina of Time, like going back and doing stuff in like the past that affects the future. And it has stuff like that, but it's not really puzzles. It's most of it's kind of obvious, or you just have to talk to the right person, you know. So the actual time mechanics and jumping back and forth, they're more interesting on a story level than I think they are on a gameplay level. Like, there's not much thought that goes into it, but it does.
So what's like one example of like a fairly straightforward thing that you changed via time or whatever?
Well, a lot of it has to do with acquiring powers. So you'll be in one time. There's two main timelines. They split. At the beginning of the game, you're given a choice. Like, do you want to, you know, stay as a special forces, you know, behind the scenes guy, or do you want to join the army? And so that choice is like the big choice in the game. And whatever you pick, you're going to go do the other one anyway, because you're jumping back and forth. So a lot of times you'll be in one timeline and, you know, you're in the army and you have to stop. There's a part where someone snuck in and put all these bombs, but they're like invisible bombs. So you need a power that you could see invisible bombs, and you can't do anything in the timeline you're at. So like if you go forward in that timeline, the bombs go off and the enemy gets the base and everything. But if you go to the other timeline, you'll meet these like traveling, I don't want to call them gypsies, but that's kind of what they feel like, traveling gypsy types who have this kind of carnival type sideshow thing going on, and they'll teach you some, you know, stuff. And one of the things they teach you is how to, you know, see the invisible stuff. So you do that in the other timeline, then you come back and you could defuse the bombs before they go off. So, I mean, that's like one example, but it doesn't require that much thought. I mean, usually when you're stuck in one timeline, you know, oh, just go to the other timeline.
That kind of sounds like, so does it play kind of like a choose your own adventure book where like you can go whichever way you want, but eventually if you make enough wrong decisions, you'll just have to...
You'll die and then have to restart over again?
Yeah, like is it like that? Like do you just come to a bunch of dead ends?
It sort of is, except when you make a wrong decision, you know right away. So sometimes I make them on purpose. Like you could tell what the obviously bad decision is. And
okay.
I want to fill out more of my time map or whatever. So okay. I'll make them on purpose sometimes around. But usually if you have a choice, and you'll have choices sometimes, it's like one of my choices was I was like sneaking in somewhere and it was like, you know, continue to try to sneak or like charge the enemies. And I'm like, I know if I go run at the enemies, it's going to be a bad idea. But I wanted to see what happened. And of course, when I did that, it led to a bad ending. And when you get the bad endings, the game like ends. It's like you'll just get a screen that will tell you what happened. Like you went and did this and that had this repercussion and blah, blah, blah. Game over. But then you'll go back to like this portal area where these like young kids exist that are like the Time Lords. I don't know what they are. And then they'll tell you, oh, you made the wrong decision. Maybe next time, blah, blah, blah. So, like, it never really ends.
Okay. And it doesn't sound like there's any real, like, punishment for doing the quote-unquote wrong decisions.
No,
right?
It's just... not really. I mean, I've been doing them on purpose. Yeah. You don't always know for sure which one the wrong one is, but I've been trying to pick some of them on purpose just to get the bad ending. Or...
If you guys are looking for, like, an adventure game based around the time travel, you should try out Shadow of Destiny. I think it's on PlayStation 2 and maybe PSP also. But it's pretty interesting. It's like just an adventure game, like point and click kind of, except you can travel through time and your decisions are like, they make branches in the story and stuff. And it's actually pretty cool.
I love point and click games. I've never even heard of that.
Oh yeah, it's pretty cool. That same team made a Time Hollow on the DS, but that's not supposed to be that good.
Yeah. I remember looking into that, but anyway.
Well, that is interesting. That is the same kind of concept, right? It's like you can look back through time in the same location to see like how a murder was committed or something like that.
Sure. Sure.
It's a pretty tough concept, time travel in general, because it's always kind of like a paradox, right? It's interesting how Nintendo always seems to boil down time travel to like planting trees. planting vegetables in the ground and watching them grow. Remember even Mother 3 was supposed to have that? That was like a big thing. Like you plant trees and the trees are persistent. Yeah. Fable was supposed to have that too originally before it got totally chopped down.
Are you playing anything else, Zero?
Well, let me think. Yeah, I'm playing Mass Effect 2 on PS3, which isn't really a Nintendo game, but I guess since Mass Effect 3 is coming to the Wii, it is soon to be a Nintendo franchise. It's a fun game. It's really linear, though. It's like you get missions, and each mission, like, it's not a game. If you're looking for I haven't played like Xenoblade, but it kind of sounds like the opposite of Xenoblade. Xenoblade sounds like this big, vast world you could explore. In this game, it's more like you have your main quests and then you have side quests. But whenever you pick one, you just go to one planet and do stuff on that planet. It's pretty linear. It's fun, though. It's like the actual battle system's more like a shooter. So it's kind of has RPG elements and building your characters and stuff. But when you're actually playing, it's more like a shooter. You know, take cover, shoot at people, snipe them, different stuff like that.
I played a demo of Mass Effect 3 on the Xbox 360, and The shooting stuff I thought was okay, but the cool thing was that the way you can use your powers to enhance the action. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Well, that is fun, and it's at the beginning of the game you get to sort of pick like what's your character's main strength gonna be. And I hate having to pick that at the beginning of games because you're like, well, I don't know what.
Yeah,
the
it's always awful. Yeah, like when you have to pick your classes or powers before you've even seen the game. It's a really bad decision that should just like it's a bad RPG cliche that should just die probably.
Yeah, but I'm pretty happy with mine because I picked like the sort of stealth. So my guy has like he could go invisible for a couple seconds, and he's like good with long range weapons, so my sniper rifle and stuff. So that's cool where, like, you get to, not only do you get to use these powers, but they're sort of based on, you know, different choices you got. I mean, you had to make the choice at the beginning, which kind of sucks. But even as you go further, you get to choose which of your powers to put more of your, you know, put more into when you unlock powers and stuff like that. So it's fun. I think actually, I feel weird saying this because I'm always so down on HD games, but I think this game, it actually does a pretty good job, I think, of just creating like a world that's not just super cliche. Like there's different alien races and they all interact with each other in different ways. And, you know, humans are in most like science fiction, humans are either like the center of everything or they're like, you know, the outcast race that has to like make their way up to sit with the giants and or whatever. But in this game, it's like you're kind of just another race. And like, it's not like very human sense. It is in the sense that the main guy you play as is a human. You know, a lot of the people on your teams are humans.
Oh, he has to be a human?
I think he does. I mean, you can make it a male or a female. But I think it has to be human. Yeah, because the story does kind of revolve around, like, you in the last game, which I didn't play, like, you were, like, you know, the savior of humankind or something. But I think it's interesting, like, all the different alien races. And some people are caught up in this global conflict, but other people are just kind of living their lives. And it really creates, I think, a more believable world than, like, Gears of War or something, which I think is just really cheesy.
It's interesting that you brought up the linear thing because this seemed to be a trend at the last E3. Did you guys notice that people are making these, they call it like a wide corridor game. So the actual game and the story is linear, but the way you can approach each like enemy encounter actually leaves you some flexibility. You know, like a lot of things were doing that at this E3, I thought, which is kind of an interesting concept. I'd probably rather just be just totally open and sort of freeform, but this is much better. That's much better than just having totally linear like Call of Duty where like you get your machine guns here and these guys pop out here and you have to do that. So I don't know. Did you guys notice that trend?
Yeah, I haven't really noticed that trend in the games I play. I think I've probably noticed that trend in the industry and thus sort of the games that I avoid. But yeah, if given the choice, yeah, I think that would be a really great lesson for the industry to learn if it is in fact learning it, that you could at least, you know, it's one thing if they want, okay, like this is the story I want to tell, you know, this is the way I want the player to go about experiencing this game. However, you know, we'll give the player the freedom to sort of get through it in whatever way they prefer.
Yeah, it seems like everybody else is finally starting to have a backlash against the sort of interactive QTE movie kind of thing, which I despise, and I really hate that about this generation. But so I hope that there's, you know, like a swing in the other direction, which seems to be happening from this E3.
I mean, I don't mind, you know, I always say, like, I value the narrative in games above anything. I don't mind if a game has a really good story and is just sort of there for me to take it in. But what I do mind is when games sort of pretend, like as you said with the QTE event, you know, a lot, where they try to give this illusion that you're in control when you're not really. That's what turns me off.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's good that you like adventure games because I think those are really good vehicles for stories. But I don't know if games. Yeah, I don't know if the other genres of games are always good vehicles for stories.
Yeah, not too many.
Actually, that's kind of I was telling Andrew the other day that, you know, Valkyria Chronicles, I always kind of wanted to play it. Mm-hmm. And so one day I just watched the entire thing on YouTube. Oh. Like, I watched all the cutscenes and I skipped through all the missions and just, you know, looked for the places where people were talking, and I just watched the whole thing, and it took like a bunch of hours. And it was kind of like, it was kind of interesting in a way. It was an interesting way to, you know, play through, unquote, a game. But it wasn't really suited. Like, the narrative style wasn't really just marathoning it right through, right, like that, you know?
I don't even think that game has that great of a story anyway. I like the characters and everything, but the actual plot is really generic. But I think the story is kind of just like take it or leave it, really.
Yeah, I just like kind of like the characters based on the anime version of this thing.
The characters are cool, and you do get connected to them in the game, and a lot of them actually, I forget if they can die or maybe they just have to leave permanently or something, but you kind of get protective of certain ones, and
I mean,
that's good.
You were talking about story in games. Like, my ideal world is a world in which all role-playing games just have anime versions that are, like, condensed and better. and then I never have to actually play them to get, you know, one little cutscene every, like, 5 hours of grinding.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. Well, for me, I've been playing a couple little things. I sort of restarted Pokemon Platinum, which is, if anyone wants to follow on the message boards, Devoid and myself, but mostly Devoid, have sort of started up this little Pokemon Society. I wasn't even gonna play like another Pokemon game in the foreseeable future, but I basically I heard that he was like the Yoda of Pokemon, so I thought if anyone can get me back on the right path, he would be the guy. So I actually set up like a little chat date with him, and we came up with this society, whatever. So I started over Platinum, and that's going pretty well so far.
So why did you start over rather than just try to collect them all?
Because I previously put a ton of hours on like Platinum and Soul Silver and White, but the thing was, I very quickly, towards the end of Platinum, I got sucked into what I consider like the seedy underbelly of Pokemon, which is the like EV training and IV stuff. Do you know what those are?
It's like fascinating. It's like the fascinating underbelly of Pokemon that, even though it seems like a simple RPG on the surface, it's like really super complicated underneath. Right?
Sure, but the way you go about doing it, in my opinion, is like the be all end all of grinding. Like, it's the very definition of grinding. And the thing is, what sucks is it seems like everyone online, like not just the random online, but like if you go find like just online Pokemon communities, like everyone does this. And if you go into a battle with Pokemon that are not trained in this way, like it just doesn't even matter how much you've prepared. You're just going to
when you play against other people, right, online.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, this is like fascinating to me, is that all those there were a bunch of hidden characteristics of Pokemon that were never supposed to be discovered by anybody, and they're just in there to like give the illusion of kind of like, oh, you know, like personalizing each Pokemon. Yeah, people went back and reverse engineered the whole thing.
And
they have like websites.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they have like websites based on producing, you know, like simulating and seeing what kind of evolution you'll get from Pokemon. It's insane.
It is. To me, this is just my personal opinion, but to me that takes all the
magic
fun out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, you've got these like cutesy little characters and stuff, and like, you know, it's like common practice to just like basically just like download Pokemon. Like, you would just basically, instead of doing the grinding, you just basically admit that it's all a facade, and you just like and these people just like,
you like hack your card or something like that.
I don't know, and somehow they just like can generate them online and download them. I think somehow there's a thing where you like set up a wireless device to mimic a DS and like trade with it or something like that.
That is crazy. Yeah, the top level of anything competitive, it just like sucks all the fun out of everything. Like, no items, final destination, you know?
Yeah, well, yeah. Well, you would think it'd be one thing if it was just the top level, but it seems like this top level extends or like somehow just like envelops any sort of online community. Like, I think it's the kind of thing where as soon as that element has entered the community, like, it's all over, you know? So, anyway, so we kind of had this idea, and Devoid got it going, and he runs the whole thing in it, and so that sort of inspired me to start over and not participate in that at all. If the only person I ever play against is Devoid, then that's fine, but at least I'll be able to enjoy myself there. So, other than that, my wife and I recently conquered Lost Levels on our copy of Mario All-Stars. And
it's a tough game, huh?
Yep. When I say my wife and I, of course, it was mostly me.
It's mostly her.
But she very proudly hangs on to levels. I think it was 4-2, 6-2, and like 7-1 or something. Those are the ones that she happened to beat while it was her turn. So,
how many levels does that game have again? Because there's more than 32, right?
Yeah. There's all the X, it goes into like A something.
Yeah, ABC.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, I didn't do all those. Am I missing something? I thought those were just like the master.
Isn't the whole game kind of like a master quest?
Those are, I think that's where the game begins. Like, that's where the challenge starts.
Are you kidding me? The game was freaking impossible as it is.
Actually, you know, like everyone says that the All-Stars version is a lot easier. I got the original version on a virtual console, and man, that game is hard as balls. It's so tough.
Well, so how far did you get on that?
I got to like the third world, and I was just like, fuck this. No, but I've always meant to go back, but it's hard. It's like a real challenge.
The later levels, like when you get world 6 and beyond, there's parts of the stages where you can tell the developers are just laughing at you from beyond the development grave or what, you know, like 30 years or 25 years later, they're just like, ah, those stupid kids are still
those mad developers are confined somewhere within Kyoto HQ.
Yeah, they've never been let out again. I don't know.
Well, it's not even just the level design on that. That game has weird stuff like sending you backwards in the game.
Oh, yeah, and poison mushrooms.
They really just did not like the players. I don't know what they were thinking.
Now, do you guys have a preference between Mario and Luigi? Because I tend to relinquish myself to the slippiness of Luigi for his awesome jumping ability.
Oh, he actually has that in Lost Levels?
Oh, yeah. Oh, he can jump much better. But it's like, how can I put it? It's like, you know, when you would try to like change directions or like stop on a dime, he slides like crazy.
Yeah, it's the classic Luigi kind of thing, the advantage thing. I always kind of hated using him, but it is an advantage if you can master that weird
slip. Yeah, because otherwise, because there are some parts where you like need to get a running start with Mario to make the jump, but with Luigi, you don't have to. The other thing I've been playing, this is the main thing I've been playing, is Xenoblade. I finally, as of a couple weeks ago, I finally started Xenoblade, and I am like 50 hours into it. People tell me I'm only a little bit more than halfway. I've been doing like every side quest because I love side quests. And
are you
game,
like a compulsive gamer in general that always does everything?
Yes, yes, I am.
That must be tough, man.
Well, it is kind of tough as far as your time commitments, but that's how I enjoy it. So I'm enjoying it. But yeah, you know, just if I can just say one thing about what has impressed me about this game, which is what everyone has said, but the level design and the scope of these areas, I mean, I can't believe that it's running on the Wii, first of all. I don't know if, like, Nintendo gave Monolith, like, secret access to parts of the system resources that other developers were not given, but I know that the textures are very, like, low res and stuff, but the worlds are just ginormous, and it seems to mostly all run, like, it all loads up at once.
It's like Grand Theft Auto or something, though, right? Just streaming, kind of?
Yeah, kind of. It's not just, you know, like a lot of RPGs, they may say that you can explore in the sense of like, okay, you can go this way down the cave. But this is like true, like exploration in that there are paths that you have to look for. Like they'll be completely hidden at like first, second, and third glance. But then you come across the fourth time and you see like this little nook you haven't noticed before, and then you go in it, and then it leads to like this whole other secret area where there's like, you know, different enemies, and
that's pretty rare these days in games. That reminds me of like the first Metroid or something like that.
Well, but it's I don't even know how to describe it, honestly. I've never played a game with quite this element in it before. And the thing is, have either of you guys played it? It sounded like Zero. Had you played it?
No. I was talking about what it sounded like.
Okay, right. So what's really interesting is the game absolutely rewards you for this exploration, because you might think that it'd be like, oh, like a chore, like, oh, I need to explore every part of the map, blah, blah. But what's kind of interesting is, like, there's these landmarks. And the game literally gives you experience points just for reaching these certain landmarks.
Yeah, that's really cool. So your obsessive compulsiveness is naturally rewarded?
Exactly. Yeah, and like, you know, some of them are actually labeled like secret area or whatever, and they give more experience, it seems. And I don't know, it's just the designs of the areas are so huge, and all the areas they play differently. Like I just recently got to this snowy area, and the paths are like, you know, in movies when someone will be like inching sideways, pressed up against like the side of a cliff, and like they're walking on this like 3-inch. Yeah. So in this like snowy mountain area, the paths are more like that. Like it feels like you're walking along that kind of a path, and you can actually fall and hurt yourself on these areas. You know, there's no real penalty for dying, but yeah,
you just fall onto a different part of the giant. Does everyone control like Luigi?
No, it's actually, there's no slipperiness really to speak of. But anyway, so I've just been super impressed with that game, and I can't wait to see where it goes from here in the next 40 hours or whatever.
That's insanely long. It sounds pretty cool, but nobody ever mentions like the story or character when they talk about this game. How's that stuff?
Well, you know, as I said, those are super important things to me, and I would say that the story is, you know, it's just good enough that I want to know what happens next. And
the premise is pretty cool, at least, right?
Again, you know, it's fairly unique. It doesn't feel like just another, you know, it doesn't feel like the kind of plot that you've seen dozens of times. I don't know, I don't feel that they're really breaking the mold in terms of, this won't set like a new standard for storytelling, I don't think. But and I can say that the characters are, all except for one of them, are totally not annoying, which might not sound like much of a ringing endorsement, but I mean, come on, like how many games with ensemble casts, especially if there's voice acting, there's usually like two or three characters who are just like, oh my god, shut up, or like,
JRPGs usually have like a mascot character or something like that.
Well, and that's kind of, I think, who the annoying one is in this game. He's this little like alien puffball thing, and
but there's like a couple Japanese kids, man, who are just so into that alien puffball.
Oh, completely. I imagined when they made this game and they put him in, they just probably started producing the merchandise immediately, because he's just like, if you tried to think of the cutest, most like sickeningly sweet thing. But the problem is, I actually turned on the Japanese voice acting because
That's Japanese voice acting, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, well, the thing is, the voice acting, the English is like British, it's like British accents and everything, and it actually sounds awesome, so I love to leave it on. But for this one character, I don't know if whoever did the British dubbing, like, if they didn't quite get what is supposed to be cute about these like really Japanese mascot characters, whatever, but it's just, it sounds like a creepy demonic monster that you need to kill or something, like the British version of the voice acting. And then the Japanese one sounds like exactly what you would imagine. So anyway, okay, well, that I think wraps up our now playing. So now we will move into a new segment of the podcast, and we'll just try to quickly go over a couple of the sort of top stories in the Nintendo world lately.
This segment, by the way, is called "What Do You Know, Joe?"
Oh boy, you keep pushing that, and we'll see if it catches on.
Cup of Joe.
Since Fink is not here, and we're definitely not calling it Cup of Joe. For many reasons. Okay. Anyway. But thank you for trying.
Sure.
So, first of all, the announcement fairly recently that Namco Bandai is going to be taking at least a healthy chunk of the work for the upcoming Smash Brothers game, and just wanted to get your opinions on it. So, Andrew, is there anything that sort of comes to mind when you think of this new Smash Brothers and what it might mean having Namco Bandai work on it?
First, I want to know what they're actually doing. I'm kind of confused, too. Like, there's the Wii U version and the 3DS version being developed simultaneously. It's a bit unclear whether they're completely separate games, like the two new Marios are.
Because he kept saying that they would enhance each other, so they can't be exactly the same game.
I hope not. But then, like, what Namco's role is in this? Like, are they developing both, or are they doing just one of them? Mm. Or I don't know. But I'm kind of more worried about the fact that there's two coming out at once more than anything. It's kind of like with the Mario games. You wonder, like, how are they splitting their resources? And maybe that's why Namco was brought in, but it's still kind of, that's the thing that worries me. Namco themselves, though, I mean, do you guys think they're a good developer? I think they're kind of like most Japanese developers nowadays, they're kind of like spotty, like some good
stuff.
There's
nothing technically wrong with games like Tekken, though, and that's what basically they're being used for, is the technical stuff, right? I mean, Sakurai is kind of like, he's like a necromancer. except he uses live people. He's like a Vitamancer. Yeah. That's how I imagine him. Just like a puppeteer, just like bending and manipulating everyone to his will and making poses like Sheik and Samus and stuff like that. And then people just, you know, like, under his control. Because, like, he has a really weird, you know, philosophy. He's like the guy from the Halo guy who made the Alex Seropian, who he has, like, a very small team of his own. And then he just hires and like, outsources and stuff like that.
That's grunt work, basically.
Yeah, so that's all Sakurai does. And basically the last games he's made were all high-quality games. And they were made with, like, completely different staff. Like, as soon as one game finishes, he has no mercy or, like, sentiment or anything. He just, like, axes the whole staff. He's like, back to Game Arts or Hades or wherever you come from. And that, you know, he just dissolved the Kid Icarus team recently. And people were like, oh, why did he do that? But that's what he does. He's like a cold, he's stone cold at Sakurai.
You are painting a hilarious picture that...
Yeah. And he also has a picture of Dorian Gray on his wall because he looks like he's, like, 12 years old.
Yeah, he does.
He gains his eternal youth by sucking the life from the people under his control.
Oh, that's amazing.
Well, I mean, I guess if they're just doing the tech side, but I don't know. I mean, it's unclear what they're actually doing, so I have no real opinion. I'm sure the games will be good. I kind of think that the Wii U game will be like the main focus. That's sort of how the new Super Mario is feeling right now. Like, if there's two games at the same time, I think Nintendo's always going to focus more on the console version over the handheld version.
Am I completely wrong in thinking that these two games were supposed to be like the same game and that people would like play online against each other cross-platform?
I thought Sakurai said that he wouldn't make them multi-platform unless he could come up with like an interesting angle for it. So I'm thinking like maybe you build a character on the 3DS and then use that character on the Wii U or something.
Wouldn't playing against other people be the interesting angle?
Yeah, I guess, but Sony's done that about 10, will have done that about 10,000 times by the single one of their games coming on Vita and PlayStation 2. But you know, like the real danger of that is that the game getting delayed into like, you know, whatever. Maybe that's why he's using all this external help. And I think Nintendo's going to do that more often as when it gets to their HD generation, the Wii U. Like they already started doing it on Skyward Sword. Did you know Monolith Soft actually helped out with Skyward Sword?
Yeah, I'd heard that.
Yeah, and a bunch of other people did too. So maybe they'll start doing that. They'll just use the Sakurai method for everything. I mean, honestly, doesn't Sakurai seem to you guys like a real control freak, but like a friendly one?
Yeah, I mean, it could be. You know, my opinion, if that ends up happening, if that ends up being the trend for Nintendo, I might be entirely all for that because I think that a common conclusion is that Nintendo is like, you know, it's these brilliant, you know, visionaries with these amazing ideas and great concepts and all that, but that they don't necessarily focus enough on the like
tech and
the nuts and bolts and the nitty gritty. So it might be, you know, that might be the perfect solution would just be to sort of outsource the muscle.
Yeah, and there's so many like Western developers like who have like great technical abilities, but you know you wouldn't even want to play one of their games, and they could be used for that kind of thing.
Exactly. And I'm sure I'm sure all of them would love a chance. You know, they'd probably be killing each other to help make the next Smash Brothers or you know Mario Kart or whatever it's going to be. So
that's the interesting. You know, Smash Brothers. You know, most of the team that Sakurai used was from Game Arts, right? Who made Grandia?
Sure. Right.
And they also made their own like Smash Brothers type game with the Teenage Ninja Turtles, but it was like nowhere near as good.
Oh yeah.
It's actually not bad, but it was nowhere near as good, and that's because you know.
I never played it. I remember before it came out, I actually first saw it in GameStop, and the GameStop employee was like, "Oh yeah, it's gonna be just as big as Smash Brothers because it's made by the same people or something like that."
And it's Teenage Ninja Turtles, the most relevant brand in the world.
Hey, man, I love me some Ninja Turtles.
That's where you learn the lesson about listening to GameStop employees.
Yeah.
It took a while, but he's finally learned that lesson. Actually, I played at the meetup. I played with Rob. He had the Super Nintendo, and he had just bought Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Tournament Fighters, which is a fighting game with Ninja Turtles.
Oh, my God.
Have you played it?
I never played it, but I remember I had like a, you know, like an EGM or something that extensively covered it. And, you know, back in the day, when you couldn't just go on YouTube. I just like read everything about that game. That
really?
I could.
Yeah. You should play it because it's kind of awesome. Like the actual turtles are so weak and underpowered, and any like villain character you pick could just wail on them.
Well,
like,
I disagree. Donatello's awesome in that game.
He's all right, but the villain characters are just like super powerful. Like one good hit can take off like half of your turtle health bar. And Rob kept picking turtles on the side of good, and I kept picking villains. And the record was like 20-1 or something. That was awesome.
I remember. Isn't there like a shark guy who's like never been in any other Ninja Turtles thing ever?
I didn't recognize any of those characters, to be honest, except for Shredder and the turtles. And even Casey Jones wasn't in there. It was a really weird cast.
What? I don't know that. No Casey Jones.
Maybe he's unlockable or something.
Am I mistaken? Was April playable?
No, like nobody you know is playable except for, I don't think even Splinter's there. I think it's just Shredder and the Turtles.
That's weird. Do you think someone made like a different fighting game and then was like, we need some more name recognition?
That's an interesting idea.
Like these kind of look like mutants.
It's like that Sunsoft game, like they're supposed to be Superman, but then they lost the license. So it was like Sunman or something.
Interesting. Moving along, next topic. Nintendo is going to start with the digital downloads for their full retail games. That will begin next month with New Super Mario Bros. 2. And we've heard that there's going to be some bonuses for people who do the digital route. And at least on this side of the ocean, it's going to take the form of additional Club Nintendo coins. If I'm not mistaken. So, I don't know, is that enough of an incentive for you guys? Or is there something else that you think that they could do to maybe sweeten the deal for a purely digital download? Or
just like real money. Now, Club Nintendo points are rapidly getting inflated and their value is going down. Because all the things that they sell, have you noticed the price is kind of creeping up, especially for the games?
I hadn't noticed for the games, but yeah.
Because it used to be like you could get like a $10 or $15 game for 100 points or something, and now even the cheapest games are often like 150 points.
Okay.
The games actually seemed kind of like super low price to me when they first came out, which surprised me. And then there's certain items, like there's this one shirt that I always look at and it looks cool, but it's like the price of like 5 or 6 games. And I'm like, I don't think I could justify that. I'd rather get the games. But
I think they're actually doing the economy of it pretty well right now, because you have to think like, would I rather pay cash for this or use my free points? It's not like such a, like a slam dunk like it was before. And they're actually making the points somewhat worthwhile. So you think like, maybe I just want the prize instead of the game. But, it's a real hard sell, a digital download, because if it's going to be the same price, which it probably will be, then if you have a physical package, it's worth more because you have the resale value of it included, right?
Right.
And you can never lose access to it, theoretically, unless you actually lose the physical game.
Yep.
And you don't have to store it anywhere. So, I mean, and you have like an instruction manual, theoretically, and stuff like that. So I don't see like, unless it's a game like Animal Crossing that really, it should really sit on your DS and just live there.
Sure.
I can't see doing that. Like, what do you guys think? Would you ever buy a game like that? Like Mario or if it had multiplayer maybe, and you wanted to have it around you for any time somebody wanted to play.
I think it does come down to the actual game. Like you're right. Animal Crossing would be great to just have all the time.
Nintendo.
Or, you know, I would have liked to have Mario Kart on my 3DS all the time. It's too late for that. But when it comes down to the actual pricing of these, and I know Nintendo's doing some deal where they're selling downloads to retailers for cheaper, and then the retailers could do sales on them if they want. But I kind of think that for the most part, we're going to see the digital downloads being like full price all the time. And I could get cheaper retail like easily, like even the new Mario game that's coming out, I forget where, but I got it for like 30 instead of 40. Yeah. So it's like, unless they actually offer something more substantial than like a couple coins, I'll probably just stick with the cheaper wherever I find it cheapest, which is probably always going to be the retail one.
I mean, that's the problem. Like Steam gets around that by offering you just like ridiculous discounts most of the time, where you can pick up a game for like $1 or $2 or something. But you know, stuff like Xbox Live, like I remember I bought Prince of Persia or Mirror's Edge or something for like $3, you know, like the actual retail game. And then the DLC is like $8 or $10. I'm like, fuck, I can't pay that. Yeah. I bought the whole game for $3. And then, you know, it goes on sale for half price and it's still $5. It's like, ugh, how can I pull the trigger on that? It's such a bad... And DLC is usually... why am I talking about DLC all of a sudden? But it's usually a very poor deal. Did you guys see the new Super Mario Brothers 2 Iwata asks today?
Yeah. Actually, it's their plan for DLC sounded good because they were talking about waiting for feedback before making DLC.
Yeah, it actually sounds really good. Maybe they're saying that to avoid the huge backlash that like Capcom got for Tekken versus whatever it is.
Well, that's the thing. If you're going to do DLC, I mean, that's the way, to me, that's the only remotely justifiable way to do it. So I hope that they're being honest when they say that. And I hope that that's what it turns out to be. So.
Well, the fear with that is that Nintendo would make the core game kind of a little skimpier. But according to that Iwata asks, New Super Mario Bros. 2 has more levels than either the DS version or the Wii version. So that sounds pretty good to me. Like,
sure. Yeah,
as long as they price it well. And Fire Emblem has DLC also. So.
You know, what does... Because I am not one of the few proud Vita owners in the world. Don't they have like all their games available for digital download?
Yeah, I think every single game is available for digital download.
Right. So
and
what,
I think
so,
Nintendo said that all 3DS games from this point and all Wii U games will also.
Right. So, but what do they do on the Vita to like? Do they is it cheaper for the digital version, or do they have any sort of incentive? Or
I think it might be a couple dollars cheaper, but I don't think that's really going to be a useful data point. It's not that many people have Vitas, and it's so hard to figure out the sales. You know, maybe publishers know. But.
Yeah, I'm just thinking as we're actually coming to, you know, everyone, well, not everyone, but a lot of people like in the industry insist on saying like, oh, you know, digital is the future and this is going to be the last generation with, you know, physical media and stuff. Instead, now here we're actually like getting faced with it, and I'm just not really seeing too many upsides to.
Well, there's a lot of downsides. I mean, there's the upside is convenience, and the downside is right. Everything else, right? Because like,
but
you
like
know,
how inconvenient is carrying around a couple 1-inch by 1-inch cards? You know,
well, it is kind of inconvenient because like you could either have like 30 game cards, you know, just like easily lost game cards on you, or you could just have them all sitting on your system, right, with nothing else to bring.
But I mean, what if you recently purchased the Club Nintendo game card case 18?
I actually did recently purchase that, yeah.
And now all of your troubles are over. Like,
except what
like
if you lose it or leave it on the train, and now you're fucked and out like thousands of dollars.
Start a lifelong search for it that will never end and leave me penniless.
I think like if I'm like planning a trip and I'm bringing like a big bag with me or something, then I could just throw a bunch of games in. But I pretty much carry my 3DS everywhere, and like I'll play at work during break or something or lunch. And so it would be kind of convenient to me to not have to carry around a bunch of games. And more often than not, there's only really like two or three games I'm kind of in the middle of that I'd be playing anyway. Like I don't need my whole library with me every day because most of it I'm definitely not going to play, but it would still be convenient to me in that sense. I'm a little less clear on what the advantage is for home consoles, though. Am I too lazy to pop out a disc and put another one in? Or
right,
you know, every one of those steps adds a big like barrier in the process, even if it doesn't seem like a lot or it's easily overcome. Like even just turning on your console, having to get up to turn on your console, or being able to do it remotely is kind of a big difference.
That is true, and that makes me feel so lazy.
Because we are lazy. That's like it's going to be like Wall-E. We'll just lose all of our bones and stuff.
I definitely think there's certain games that I don't play just because I haven't played them in a long time, and I'm not used to like popping the disc in. It's like I'd have to make an active decision to put the disc in before playing. Whereas if I was just browsing my games, I could be like, oh, that one, click.
Yeah.
When I used to play my PlayStation 2 last generation, like I would literally go over to the wall of PlayStation 2 games, and I would just start looking at them and think, what should I play? And I would get so overwhelmed and annoyed that I would just not play anything. Like that actually happened like all the time for some reason. Well,
my system is like I'll have a stable of like, you know, the five or so games that I may want to play, and I'll leave that out next to the TV.
Yeah, that's smart.
So I can just glance. So like when I might normally just say like, oh, I'm just going to play, you know, Xenoblade now, but then I might glance and say like, oh, but I should really try to do a couple more levels of Lost in Shadow before that gets too old.
That's like my system, only it's even more complex because I have the games I'm currently playing on top of my TV, and then I have the games I should be playing like in another pile, And then I have all the rest of my games like that I'm not playing. So it's like three piles, except the third pile is really a wall of games. But
see, and then isn't that so sad that we have like piles of should be playing games? Like
people release a lot of games these days. It's like there's no way you can keep up with it unless you have like, no job or anything like that.
That's why I like never get in on the
drought thing.
Yeah, I mean, oh my God. Droughts are like good for most serious gamers.
Yeah, I used to complain about it, but then one day I realized, like, what the fuck am I doing? I have, like, hundreds of games that I haven't opened yet. Like, I don't have the right to complain about this because of my stupidity.
Yeah, and then when I think of, like, how I paid full price for these games and have not even opened them, and now they're, like, $10 on the shelves.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of galling. But as it affects, like, the digital download thing, I mean, it really comes down to price. I mean, Sony, they have PSP sales all the time, and they're pretty cheap. Nintendo, it really remains to be seen if they're willing to ever sell New Super Mario Bros. 2 for like $10 one weekend or something.
Haven't they already started with like eShop stuff? Like they've finally started.
Yeah, there's like small discounts. But you think they'll do that with retail games? Like,
well, I don't know. I imagine it's probably not going to be nearly the as drastic. You know, like some of those games go like 50% off or something, right?
Yeah, like 40% or something.
Okay.
So unless they do that, I don't think the digital download thing will take off, except for in, you know, rare cases where people really value that convenience. But the other danger of digital download stuff is that, like, you know, the iOS Rock Band game is getting removed next week, you know? So, like, you won't be able to get it anymore. And that kind of shit happens all the time. Like, as time goes on, stuff becomes unavailable, stuff gets off of the store, you can't re-download it if you lose it. And that kind of stuff is really kind of bad, you know.
Right. Because so, now if I want a copy of Abadox for the Nintendo Entertainment System, I can just go two blocks away and go buy it, you know.
So. Exactly. And even something like that was released on a virtual console, like you know, like an IRM game, I think they took all those off too. So you can't even download those anymore. And that was on the virtual console in this generation. So that kind of stuff is a danger in digital downloads, in addition to the lack of resale value, which is kind of a big deal. Like, your game is worth less.
No kidding. All right, but we are all in agreement that a couple more coins is not really enough at this point. I think, you know, I'm sure there's a certain segment who is just excited to, you know, do the digital thing no matter what, and that will be enough to persuade them to go that route, but I don't think a couple extra coins is going to push someone over to that side.
Putting me one third of the way to Bonsai Barber is not really that large of an achievement, which I just bought with my coins, by the way.
Oh yeah, okay.
It's Zunami, the gold mine guys. I hope.
Oh,
it was
okay.
The one game they've made in 8 years.
No, they also made Zendoku, which is like Sudoku with pictures and power ups.
Power ups. Interesting.
Yeah, it's like an iOS DS game or something.
But that's just because they're working on getting Project Zero ready for Wii U launch.
Project Zero is going to be the best game ever. It's going to be so good. Your mind comprehends.
Is that the Fatal Frame spinoff?
No, although, you know, the Fatal Frame series is called Zero in Japan. Project Zero is like the GameCube game that Zunami was rumored to be working on. It was supposed to be like a third-person Perfect Dark. It was the best game of all time, like from the GoldenEye team. That one of those super hyped games that just ended up like dissolving or never existing.
Oh, interesting.
Those guys are pretty, like, Zunami's pretty fascinating, and Armature is also pretty fascinating. Do you guys remember them?
Yes.
They really haven't done jack shit either.
No.
They had some big dreams when they left Retro or whatever, but they haven't produced very much. I think a lot of companies like that just end up doing, like, outsource work for other companies, and Armature did some port of, like, Metal Gear Solid Collection for the Vita or something like that.
Wasn't Armature, like, essentially just a small handful of people? Like, it wasn't a real development team, was it?
It is a team, and they've had, like, a studio for a long time, and their model was the same as Sakurai's model, except they couldn't really make it work for them, I guess. So they would outsource what they needed to, have people inside, so they'd be flexible and whatever, but they really haven't produced anything. No. So, I mean, do you care about that, Andrew, being a Retro fan? Or do you think Retro will, like, a lot of people leave Retro, like, really often. It's kind of staggering, but their games are still fine. Like, I don't see any difference in quality, and actually, like, Donkey Kong Country Returns better than the earlier ones. What do you guys think?
Well, I don't know if it's better than Metroid Prime, but it was weird when those three guys left, but yeah, Donkey Kong Country Returns was still awesome. And
then after Donkey Kong Country Returns, a bunch of other people left, but you know, so.
I think people just leave all the time from every company. It's a big deal for Nintendo because there's always a certain segment of the population, like, looking to discredit Nintendo's only core, you know, Retro's like the big Western core, making shooters, and if they lose retro, it's all over.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's true, but like,
you hit the nail on the head there.
I think a lot of Western employees don't like working like under the Japanese sort of rules. Like, I know at least for some arms of Nintendo's like Western companies, like marketing and stuff, like, you know, they're pretty brutal. Like, they're kind of stingy and very like brutal with hours and things they ask for and demand from those people, you know.
That's probably true too, but I think like some of this retro thing is like, at the same time, a couple of people left after Donkey Kong. Like, they recently hired like someone, like some big guy that worked on Uncharted series and some big guy that worked on some other big series. It's like they're not just letting people leave. They're actually hiring people to replace them, and some of these people they're hiring are also big names in the industry. So
as long as Jeff Spangenberg is still there to guide with his firm firm hand of getting prostitute parties and things like that. Do you remember that? Like, there was like a real like scandal at Retro before of having them have like coke whore parties, you know?
I never heard of this.
Me neither.
Maybe I just dreamed it up or made it up or something.
The last news topic is Japan has said that the 3DS XL will not include the AC adapter for the Japanese release. That's not the case internationally, but I don't know. What do you guys think about that? Does it say anything about what Nintendo might be trying to do, what their philosophy with hardware might be going forward? Do you care?
Is the XL going to come with the cradle in North America?
I believe so.
Because if it doesn't, that'd be kind of like a big shift from the 3DS when you just put it in there when you're done with it. Right?
I don't know.
I think Japan is kind of used to getting shafted on things like this. Like, the Wii didn't come with Wii Sports, you know? And just in general, they pay more, they get a worse deal, they get less stuff. Except with their collector's editions, they get really nice ones, but they cost like a billion yen. So I don't think it necessarily signifies anything Nintendo's going to do in the West. I think, like, you know, stuff like Monster Hunter is paid online in Japan. Like, right. People can get away with more in Japan, so they try to get away with more. But I don't think Nintendo would have the balls to try to attempt that in North America.
No, definitely not. Zero any input on this?
Well, I don't even understand. They're not including the AC adapter, so there's no way to charge this thing out of box? Or?
Well, you know, the other thing is that the DS has had the same AC adapter for like four editions, and they sell a lot in Japan, so maybe anybody who would buy one already has one, which
and
I have.
That, I think, is like the real heart of this matter. It's not just that they're like, oh, we don't feel like including it. It's... we know that probably 90% of our Japanese audience already has at least one of these, if not two. So why would we manufacture another and sell them another one?
But are they still, I mean, are they still selling them separately, or are they just like, here's a 3DS?
Enjoy your 8 hours.
Enjoy your 4 to 6 hours.
Yeah, 4 to 6 hours.
I wish they'd extended the battery a little more on the 3DS. I'm waiting for Nyko to release like a Power Circle Pad Pro.
I thought someone already released something that gave it like 1 or 2 more hours of battery.
They did for the 3DS, but now they have to do the same thing for the XL.
Oh, yeah. I don't really have much of an opinion on them not including this in Japan. If it was America that they weren't doing it, I might be worried, but. Yeah, I think in Japan, they always kind of get ripped off on stuff, so...
USA.
And I mean, I'm thinking, even if they did it in America and they had, like, a version with the AC adapter and then one without and then had it sold separately, I mean, I would get the one that doesn't have it because, like I said, I already have two of them. I have one that's hooked up next to me all the time, so... whether I'm going to be playing the 3DS or the DSi XL, I can just swap the power. And it's just, I don't know, it's more convenient. I don't need another thing in my house, so I really don't mind doing
it. If you could save money, it would be better, too. But there's a potential revenue stream for all us U.S. guys that we can just sell our AC adapters to Japan that we don't need.
Right. I mean, if they knock, you know, even $3 off the price, then... fine, that's, you know, one cheap eShop game I can get for the savings, you know, so.
Yeah, they probably won't do that.
No, well, I don't know. I feel like I saw something where, is it true that in Europe they have the two different SKUs with the one with the adapter and one without? For like
Nintendo usually doesn't like multiple SKUs.
I know.
They're pretty confusing.
I do kind of appreciate that they don't do that, but...
yeah, that's annoying to have.
I don't know. I thought I saw for, like, whether it was for the previous, like one of the DSIs or something, I thought that they might have done that, and one was, like, five euros cheaper or something like that.
Well, you may be right.
I don't know. Maybe someone can confirm in the comments and correct our stupidity. Anyway.
Europeans there. Anyway.
All right. Well, that does it for the news segment. And now we're going to have a special backlogist PSA delivered by our very own Steven.
Hello, citizens. A disturbing letter came across my desk the other day, informing me of something that is plaguing the video game industry. It is known as a backlog. If you're unfamiliar with the term, bless your soul. For the uninitiated, a backlog is an accumulation over time of games waiting to be completed. Paraphrase from Wikipedia, the source for all truth. With real life getting in the way, and jobs, and kids, and sports, and extracurricular activities, it is very easy to fall behind in your quest to finish some games, or in some extreme cases, to even start a gem, as it seems out of sort and foolish, as 16-bit titles are not exactly new. An incredible number of collective people haven't even touched some of the best games ever. The Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past, Super Metroid, Final Fantasy VI, Super Mario Galaxy, and A Little King Story, to name a few. It is my great honor to bring to you a new and fresh six-fold program, which is sure to please you and yours in a myriad of ways. Number 1. To expunge a troubling game from your backlog. Number 2. To defeat a sinister game and reign over it with raised arms of victory. Number 3. To cheer your pals on in their efforts. Number 4. To be cheered on and applauded for the vicious blows you rain upon your selection. Number 5. To clean up your video game past in preparation of the future. And number 6. To close it out, huge time, with a giant celebration of consoles gone by. Backlogist, a portmanteau of backlog in August, is open to anyone and everyone with a backlog that they take issue with, and all are invited to both play along and urge others to finish. We are aiming for nothing less than a 100% success ratio. This does not mean that every game being played will be completed at 100%, or 101, or 103, or 105, or what have you. But just that every game involved is completed as far as the player sees fit. And this does not include giving up. Success will be had. If you do not intend to finish a game that you bring to the table, please do not select that game. September 1st marks the end of the 2012 edition. At press time, we have 36 players signed up for an unofficial 77 games, spanning numerous generations and consoles. Each of these brave men and women knows the risks and rewards that await them. A positive mind and strong will are almost necessary in this undertaking. We can't afford to be innocent. Stand up and face the enemy. It is a do-or-die situation, and we will be invincible. Awesome high five of power. Mr. Mustache and Ludus 210.
So speaking of backlogist, what are you guys picking for your backlogist games?
Well, I do believe that, you know, let's see, we have to get our choices in by probably the beginning of August. I am deciding between probably Dragon Ball Origins for the Wii. And
for the Wii? I thought that was just a DS game.
Maybe there's a different subtitle. It's the Revenge of Piccolo, King Piccolo or something like that.
Okay.
I don't know. It actually looks like a really good game. I actually, when I bought it, I was super excited to play it, and then this is what happens. It'll probably be either that or Mini Ninjas, because I have not played
that. Ninjas. Yeah, I played a bit of
that. I've heard good things about that.
It's all right. They just came out with like a downloadable sort of spin-off called Mini Ninjas Adventures.
Oh, really?
I think it's like maybe a Kinect minigame thing? I don't know.
No.
Yeah, Mini Ninjas is all right. I played a bit of it on 360 and some library runtime. For my game, I'm gonna kill two birds with one stone by picking Moon, because Devoid has set up a DS Club, and so we all voted for a game to play on the DS Club, and everybody voted for Moon, and I've always kind of wanted to play it. It's the Renegade Kid FPS game, sort of atmospheric horror FPS game, and I never played it, so I'm going to play through that on my new XL and try to knock that out of my back catalog. And Andrew is not here right now, but he informed me that he was going to try to play through NASCAR Thunder.
I'm back.
Oh, he's back,
I'm
yeah.
I'm looking to find, you know, my own copy of NASCAR Thunder, because that was probably the greatest gaming experience I've ever had.
It was pretty awesome. And that should take you about 200 hours to unlock everything.
Yeah.
No, but I'm actually going to probably try to finish Mass Effect 2, which I guess is against the rules because I wasn't...
Non-Nintendo game?
Well, not just that, but because I hadn't played it for like a month or two, and then I started playing it like this week again, and then Rob was like, you can't start playing it until August. I was like, oh, oops. But I'm also probably going to try to finish off Rhythm Heaven, which I haven't played in a while, and Pushbone, which I haven't played in a couple months. And probably, I don't know, I have a list of games, like just games I haven't played in a couple months, but that I do enjoy and want to finish eventually. So whichever of these I actually manage to finish, that will be my official game and I can claim victory.
So you're going to bring in games that you've already started. And Anand's playing games that he's going to cross with another club. You guys are just, Rob, you're making a mockery of Backlogist.
I don't actually have a backlog of games I haven't started yet. At least in
it's
the
all just games you need to finish.
Well, the only, I have a couple of games I haven't started, but I don't consider them a backlog. They're just games I haven't started yet. Like, it's not games I bought like a year ago that I never got around to. They're games I bought recently because they were on sale. And like, once I finished up the stuff I was doing now, I was going to get to them. So yeah. I don't see the point of starting them and then having like 10 games I'm in the middle of.
I have such a huge backlog that I can never clear out. I'd have to be like back 2010 or like back a decade or something.
Yeah, I was thinking like, is there like a span of time that needs to elapse before a game can be considered backlog? Like if I get The Last Story in August, I couldn't make that my backlog game, right? Because doesn't like the nature of the backlog, like it has to like have sat for a couple weeks?
I don't think that's necessarily true. I think it's just something that's unopened or you haven't really tackled yet, even though you have it.
I don't think it's time so much as like a mental thing. Like to me, a game becomes a backlog when I'm not actively playing it anymore. So
sure.
Maybe I gave up a week ago, or maybe I gave up, you know, a couple months ago, but then it's in my backlog and I want to, some of them I just give up on forever, but you know, it doesn't have to be, but I think if it's just a game I haven't played yet or I'm getting a new game or something, that doesn't really, I don't think of that as a backlog. I think of a backlog is the games that are sitting here that I should be playing and I'm not, you know?
Sure. Absolutely. And Dr. Finkelstein wanted us to report that he will be playing Epic Mickey for his backlogist entry. Start with the Montreal trip, since that happened first chronologically. The two of you were...
Well, we already forgot everything.
Lucky enough. In
our drunken haze. in Andrew's drunken haze.
In my drunken haze.
I was drunk on coke.
Paul's drunken haze.
I was drunk on coke and whores. In retro.
So is there anything, you know, PG-13 or below that you can share with our listening audience?
The vast majority of it was PG-13, I guess. I guess we could talk about some of the games we played. One thing that was interesting to me was that we all had 3DSs, but 70% of our time with them was spent street passing rather than actually playing.
I wish that I could be doing that.
Well, like, I don't know. I think it might have been more fun if we were actually playing games with each other instead of continually doing Find Me Too or whatever. But, you know, it is how it is. Like, street passing does have its odd allure, and we definitely got a lot of street passes. And we played, a ton of games. Like, some days we didn't play many games, but some days we just played all games, and I can list some of them off. Like, one thing was that the Wii there was modded. So, you know, there was some homebrew software on there and also some NES games. So one of the homebrew games that we had never played was called Super Mario War. Have you heard of this game?
I have not.
It was pretty incredible. It was basically like there's a game called Gnomes on WiiWare, which is like sort of a cut down version of this game. And even that was kind of fun, I thought, for multiplayer. Basically, it's like you just stomp on each other's heads and, you know, then you get a kill, essentially. So it's kind of like Super Smash Bros., except actually using like Mario physics and the rules of like a Mario game. And so Super Mario War is like just a huge, totally blown out version of that with tons of stages, like elements from every Mario game, like Zelda games. Like you can get like a boomerang power up. You can get a fire rod and shit like that. You can get fireballs. And essentially it's just like utter chaos.
And the character choices are awesome because it's obviously it's just like some homebrew game. So they don't have to worry about licenses. They could just steal whatever they feel like. Mm-hmm. And they had characters. Yeah, they had like Dig Dug. They had like one of the guys from ice hockey. They had characters from everything.
They all pretty much moved like Mario, which it would have been fun to see the ice hockey guy move like ice hockey or something.
I like the ice hockey guy, but yeah, that was a really fun game. That like I've resisted homebrewing my Wii for a long time, and like that game made me decide I just have to do it.
Yeah, I haven't homebrewed mine either, just because I'm just too lazy to, I guess. But I would probably do it for that and like being able to play Zangeki no Reginlove, which is the sad, forgotten game out of the games that weren't localized. You know, have you heard of it, Joe?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was keeping an eye on that game before it came out.
Yeah, I like the developer. I was kind of
excited about it. Do you know if you play that on a? Because that game has like online co-op, right?
And it has Wii Motion Plus support, yeah. It's only Wii Motion.
So if you mod your Wii so that you can play it here, would you be able to connect to other people in America, or would that just be completely...
That's an interesting question. I'd imagine the servers would be... If it has servers? Probably it doesn't have servers. So the signal might have bounced to Japan and back, but I bet you could probably do it.
All right, so what else? What other adventures did you guys go on there?
Well, we went on the Four Swords Adventures, one of the greatest games ever.
Have you played it, Joe?
No, not really. You know, I ran into Lou and Rob this past weekend, and Lou was saying that that was one of the highlights of the trip for him, was Four Swords Adventures.
He loved... Yeah, should have played more then. He only played on the last day.
It's a great game, though.
Yeah, like, it's actually astounding. Like, it's one of those things that Nintendo, that kind of competitive, cooperative thing, but it's, you know, it's like a Rorschach test in video game form, you know?
Do tell. Because, how is it like a Rorschach test?
Because basically the game just exists. It's like Grand Theft Auto when, like, you know, people are like, you can kill prostitutes and then take your money back. But it's like, that's not how you have to play the game. You can just run ambulance missions, right? And Four Swords is the same way. Like Lou was actually like, you know, a really nice, you know, friendly player who would help other people out. And basically all the rest of us were just assholes.
Well, Chicago got a particularly bad reputation. I don't know. Like, that's the way I grew up playing that. The only time I ever played that game in the past was with my cousins. And they're like, none of them take games seriously. So we would take an hour to get through a stage just constantly killing each other. And that's kind of how I thought, like, everyone played the game. And that's how Amon plays the game, too, kind of. But, like, a lot of the other people there were, like, more like, oh, let's try to get through this. Let's, you know, work together. So I think we got a reputation as, like, you know, the assholes.
The troublemakers.
You get the fire rod and everyone's standing on a patch of grass. You just have to hit the grass and see everyone light up because it's hilarious.
But how could you resist that, like, urge? It seems impossible to me.
I don't know. It actually did surprise me a bit that, like, no one else played like us.
I mean, well, I think Wei and Lu were actually pretty like good, like virtuous players, and everybody else was kind of pretty much evil or chaotic neutral or whatever.
I mean, Guillaume was kind of in the middle. Like,
Guillaume was the most evil out of anybody. he kept getting hero. So this is the other interesting thing, Joe, is that after the level, like, you have the gems you collected, but everybody votes. So you can vote on who the most virtuous player was, and you can also vote on who the most evil player was.
Hilarious.
Yeah, and they'll actually get gems added or dropped from their score. And I think Guy was pretty much every time he was a hero of darkness, which is like the most evil character.
Was it? No, that was me.
Maybe.
Every time I played, I lost like so many gems at the end. I'd always be leading in gems before those votes, and then
you just drop down from heaven. You know, that's the fascinating thing, is that the flow of the game, it's essentially, if nobody cooperates, you'll just stay on the same screen forever, just killing each other and losing all of your gems. But, like, okay, there's some sort of weird group thing going on where, like, everyone kills each other and lights each other on fire for a while, and then, like, almost telepathically, everyone just sort of goes toward the exit after a while. It's really kind of an interesting sort of game flow.
Like a social experiment or something?
Yeah, it really is. And, like, New Super Mario Bros. Wii is kind of the same experiment, right? Like, yeah, when you play that game, are you kind of, like, evil, or are you...
Oh, no, I'm always trying to help everyone. That's just my nature.
But I don't think you really get much by being evil in New Super Mario Bros. Wii, whereas, like, Four Swords is built, like, the gems at the end, you can, quote-unquote, win the stage, and you kind of, you don't have to be evil to win, but you sort of do, to, you know, you have to screw people over and make sure you get to stuff first, which means, like, throwing people out of the way so you can run over there. And
just rolling everywhere. And if somebody gets a key and opens the door with it, they get more gems. So as soon as anyone got a key, we would just try to, like, kill the key carrier. It was like Lord of the Rings.
Well, so is it really like, is the objective, is it more like Mario Kart, where it's just like, this is like a, you know, a level, and let's see who comes out on top? Or is it like...
No, it's actually supposed to be cooperative, like, technically.
Okay. So you can, like, beat the game then? Like, there is, like, a finite number of stages? Oh, okay. Yeah. Interesting. So
it's actually pretty fun. Hopefully they'll bring it back for Wii U.
There's a lot of parts where you do have to work together. Like, someone will have to hit a switch in one place that does something somewhere else that other people could cross a bridge or something. Like, so it does make you kind of work together, but those are the parts where you could also screw someone really bad if you want to. Like, there's a part where you have to throw someone across to the other side. But of course, if you want to, you could pick them up and just throw them right in the pit instead. So it's like you kind of have to trust the same people you were just fighting with. It's really interesting.
So would you only have, like, certain people throw you if you had the choice?
Well,
usually you can't really help it.
You don't get the choice because it's easy to pick someone up. So you just, like, all kind of standing there fighting, and someone grabs someone and throws them. And
that's cool.
So it is pretty. It's like that kind of thing is very un-Nintendo to me, because usually their games are so, like, polished, and there's, like, a clear way of progression and, like, a level flow and level design. But those kind of things are just kind of free for all, like, do whatever the fuck you want. Like, it's pretty interesting that Nintendo published those games once upon a time.
Wasn't Capcom the one who created the original Four Swords, or was it Nintendo?
I think Capcom and Nintendo maybe created the original one on the Game Boy Advance, but I'm pretty sure Four Swords Adventures is just Nintendo. I'm not sure who came up with it in the first place. It doesn't really seem very Capcom either. And to be honest, but yeah, some other stuff we played. We actually got some 8-player DS and 3DS going, which was pretty fun.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. So we just went through all these games, like Big Brain Academy, which is surprisingly fun with 8 players and DS. It is, actually.
Is that like one of those things where you can do the, like, download play? So only
So almost everything is download play. That's what's so great about these systems, you know, is that everyone doesn't have to have a copy of it. So almost everything we played, like, we played tons of Bomberman and different incarnations, 8-player and such. We played, download play, Big Brain Academy, we played Mario Kart, and Mario Kart 7 also, and it was all really fun. Actually, Mario Kart 7 is pretty awesome, and the battle mode is pretty awesome, too, which I really... And, one of the guys had Mario Tennis for 3DS, and I never even really considered getting it, because, you know, I'm like, oh, Mario Tennis again. You know, but when you play it multiplayer, it's like a hell of a lot of fun. It's like a really fast, furious version of Mario Tennis. And that was kind of a theme, Mario Tennis, throughout the whole meetup.
we played a lot of it.
We played Mario Tennis 64, we played Power Tour, which is pretty awesome once you turn off the power shots. And we played that Mario Tennis 3DS, and it was, like, always, like, a really good time. Like, Mario Tennis is just a really fun, it remains a really fun game. Like, I have problems with the single player, but the multiplayer is always a hell of a lot of fun.
Cool. Then, do you think because the 3DS you can play online, right? With the tennis one. Do you think playing remotely with someone would still be as fun, or was it really like the in-room experience that makes it so good?
That's almost always more fun, but I'm sure playing online would be a lot of fun also. And I'm actually going to pick up the game now when I get the chance, because playing online looks like a lot of fun.
Cool.
We kicked it really old school and played some Super Spike V-Ball.
Super Spike V-Ball is so good. Have you ever played it, Joe?
I think I did back when it was, you know, current, but not since.
It holds up pretty well. There's actually a decent amount of strategy. The controls are good. I think it holds up pretty well. We played a lot of it.
I would say it's undisputably the best volleyball game ever made. Like, seriously, like people used to say, like, talk about Beach Spikers when it came out for the GameCube, and I bought it, and I'm like, it's all right, but it's no Super Spike Volleyball. And that's like, I think Technos is a really impressive company. Like, they made Double Dragon, they made the best beat 'em up ever, which is River City Ransom. They made, like, Dodgeball, they made Super Spike Volleyball, and, like, Nintendo Cup Soccer, and they just make crazy shit, and a lot of it holds up incredibly well, you know?
Well, isn't, like, aren't all those characters, or like all the people in those games are like characters to them or something? Like in their world, aren't they?
Yeah, a lot of them are Kunio-kun characters in Japan. Kunio-kun is like
right.
But I don't think all of them are. Not, I think Super Spike Vivo was just like random people from random countries and stuff. But it's an awesome game.
They made that soccer game too, right?
Yeah, that was Nintendo World Cup Soccer.
A lot. Yeah.
Was it fun? I never played that one.
Oh my god, yeah. Well, because that was... See, at the time, I didn't even really know, like, the rules of soccer, and in fact, I'm quite sure this is not legal, but, like, you know how you can technically slide tackle in real soccer? And I think depending on how severely...
If somebody has the ball or not, yeah.
Yeah, and I think if you do it too severely, you'll get, like, a card or whatever, but in this game, it's like... Okay, go on.
I play a lot of soccer when I was younger. You slide tackle. It's legal if you hit the ball. It's illegal if you just ignore the ball and just trip it.
Okay. Well, so in this game, I don't remember exactly. I don't feel like it was nuanced at all. I feel like it was basically just like you just want to like tackle everyone in your way. And
it's like so fun in multiplayer, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I only played with a friend who had the game. And so... Yeah, we would just. Oh my god, it was just this hilarious insanity in a soccer form.
And yeah, so that game and Super Spike Vivo are both four player with the multi tap, and we were actually playing four player on an NES, and it's pretty awesome. And
it's fun how they all have like the little crunched up like Double Dragon stance or whatever. Like the little fists.
Yeah, and Double Dragon is awesome for griefing too. And like, there's another game called Nintendo. It's like their version of the Olympics. And it has like a hurdle event where you can smash the hurdle and then throw the pieces at the other.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it's they just always do stupid like crazy shit like that. And it's always pretty awesome. The holy grail for me is there's this one game that was never released in America, which is like their version of basketball. And it's like there's like three hoops on top of each other, and you can beat each other up while you're playing. And it just sounds like the best thing ever. And you can break the board, I think, and smash other people. So we did play Super Spike Vivo, Mario Tennis, all that stuff. And, of course, we played tons of Buzz, which I probably talked about before we started recording. But Buzz is, like, a great PlayStation 3 game. Supposedly, it's hard to find, but it's a quiz game. But just it's done really well, and it's always really tense, and it always comes down to the wire. And I love that game. That's, like, that would be go ahead.
Oh, why would it be hard to find for...
I don't know. I suppose it's just kind of rare or something like that.
It's weird. The kind of thing they would have made like too many copies for on purpose just to make sure that no one
Like I have judgment.
Well, does Buzz come with all four of those controllers?
It does. It's like a bundle. And also, I think that kind of stuff was big in Europe, like iToy and Buzz, but I don't know if it ever really took off in America.
Yeah, because it comes with these like little like buzzing controllers.
Game show controllers.
Yeah, so I mean, it was probably a big box, and most stores aren't going to carry a whole ton
of
those.
Sense.
Especially,
and Wei was saying that it has a sequel, but he hasn't even been able to find the sequel because it's like made in such limited quantities. But that is a pretty great game. And of course, we played WarioWare Mega Party Games. Have you played that, Joe?
No.
It is like unequivocally the greatest game of all time. As I said after the meetup last time, like on its surface, it's just like, oh, this is a great Game Boy Advance game with some tossed in multiplayer. But it is so fun. It's like awesome. It's amazing. You should really try it. What is it called, Andrew? Mega Party Games. Yeah, I think it's WarioWare Incorporated Mega Party Games.
Interesting. Okay.
It is incredible.
It's basically just the first Game Boy Advance game, but with multiplayer on GameCube.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's a lot of fun. And, you know, you can play like 13 people, like handing off controllers and stuff like that, like smooth moves or something. But there's so much more. It's really a pretty awesome game, and it's hilarious. There are some modes where, you know, one person could be winning, and then it comes down to a final mini game, and if he loses, then everybody else wins, and he gets second place. Which is good. It's really good. And aside from that, what do we play? There was some wrestling going on, the N64 wrestling games. Did you ever play those?
Oh, me? No.
Yeah, that was actually pretty fun. You know, one interesting thing was that Andrew beat Rob, Mr. Mustache, at pretty much every sports game that he had. It seems like,
really?
Well, we played some NHL 94, me versus Rob, and then me versus Rob and Lou. I won both times, but to be fair, that was my first Super Nintendo game, and I played a ton of it because me and my friends were all into that game back then, so I played a ton. And then we played Tecmo Super Bowl, and I won barely,
but I pulled it off.
Or we played Tecmo Super Bowl 2, which is a little confusing to me, but it's the same idea, basically.
Wait, which one
is
that?
Two, yeah, Tecmo Super Bowl 2. They made three of them, I think. They made three of them. But, yeah, Tecmo Super Bowl 2, that's really the only sports games I played, I think. And then the Super Spike V-Ball and stuff, and tennis, Mario Tennis. But
I read some article about how people like still competitively play RBI baseball. There's like a whole league of like a subculture or something like that of people who just still play the NES version of RBI baseball.
Well, what was that game where Rob made like an entire like league or something?
I think it's more than a league. He made like 800 teams or something.
Yeah, like the NCAA something.
It was probably from 2005, whatever it is.
Yeah, it's something he was working on for like 6 years straight. Right. Speaking of Rob's favorite stuff, we also played NASCAR Thunder. He got very annoyed. I don't really understand these sim games, and I mean this seriously. Like, it took me a while to realize that you can't just like gun it and like bump off other cars and like, you know, go full speed around turns and stuff. Like, that's how I play racing games. You know, even like Mario Kart, you know, it's not just F-Zero, like an intense game. Even Mario Kart, I mean, you could smash into people and you could, you know, when you're turning, you don't take your finger off. You just power slide the turns and stuff.
Right.
But this NASCAR game, like, you have to play it, like, seriously. I was doing really bad and it was really annoying Rob because every time you screw up, like,
it just takes control away from you for the whole lap while you're under caution.
Yeah, it's like every time you screw up, you know, you bump a couple cars and you don't even have to bump that much. Then you go into this thing, caution, and like everyone has to stop playing and it goes the whole lap. You just watch. And then it gives control back. But of course, within like 15 seconds, I'd screw up again and then it would go into caution again. And
like, so like 80% of our game was just watching the cars roll down the track and get lined up with each other again.
And then Rob got mad. I think he thought I wasn't taking it seriously, but I don't know how to play these games and it didn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, wait. So what would constitute an error on your part? What is it that you
bumping into somebody too hard or hitting a wall?
Sometimes it was on and specifically wiping out on purpose. But other times it's just like you go, you know, I'm used to like a racing game. You go into a turn, you just kind of gun it and slide. But in this game, like, you actually have to like slow down. And I wasn't used to that. So I'd be going too fast on every turn and I'd like run up against the wall and that would go into caution, or like I'd be like going and like trying to pass someone and I'd just bump their fender a little bit and it would go into caution. Like every little thing, it seemed like it was really picky.
I think my cardinal rule is that braking is not fun. It's like not a fun activity. Just like, you know, grinding or something. Mm. And anytime I have to brake, I get a little unhappy about it.
I want to say though, like Montreal was a lot of fun. This was just my first time. I mean, they did New York last year, but I didn't go to that. So this is my first time going to one of these things. And if people are sitting at home thinking, maybe I should go, but I don't know. Like, it's a ton of fun and you get to play all these games like that. It's hard to get other people together to play like Four Swords with all the link cables and everything. Eight player Bomberman and just all this stuff that's really hard to play anywhere else. And then we also went, you know, we saw stuff in the city and stuff too. So we weren't just sitting inside all the time.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun and we had a lot more people than last year because we had about like 11 or 12 people we maxed out at. And it's kind of interesting when you have that big of a group, like how do you actually keep everybody entertained? And you kind of need those specific kind of party games or eight player games and things like that. But yeah, it was a lot of fun overall. If you want to come next year, Joe.
Yes. Yeah, I almost came this year, but this was not in the cards. So anyway, definitely in the future though.
Of course, the negative of having so many people is I had to share a bed with Wei the whole time. So
that's not a negative. That's like such a positive.
Or maybe it's a positive. I mean, we don't know.
Oh, we also played some Time Splitters too, which everybody else hated, but I really enjoyed
it. I don't hate it. It just took me a while, and then I just started randomly dominating out of nowhere. But
I know, that was weird.
I was doing like, so bad at first. I don't like dual analog shooters. I just can't aim with them.
I mean, that's a game that I feel has no real modern equivalent, like the GoldenEye Perfect Dark sort of just crazy, unbalanced, put a bunch of weird shit together and have fun with it kind of game. I don't think any modern shooters really have carried that on. And I thought Nintendo maybe should have tried to like secure maybe a Wii U exclusive Time Splitters 4 or something like that. That'd be pretty awesome. But it seems like nobody cares about that type of game anymore. Yeah. But I thought it was a lot of fun.
I think people would care about it, but as we were talking about before, I think the Time Splitters like world just isn't appealing to a lot of people. Like they'd almost have to rebrand it.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the essence of it is just to have tons of options, right? So you can have like flamethrowers and machine guns and proximity mines and stuff. So that's what makes it fun, is that you can just throw everything at the wall, and you know, it's pretty hilarious when you get everything going, you know, one shot kills, things like that. Yeah, it's goofy, but it's a lot of fun. I wish there was a modern shooting game that kind of picked up the torch for me.
Yes, let's move on to what is surely the main event for a lot of listeners. You guys actually got hands-on time with the Wii U, right?
We did. We got a very limited hands-on time with the Wii U, which they kicked us out of early.
Okay, all right, very limited. So what were you guys just... Because you were invited, right?
Anderson.
I was invited, and I was nice enough to share one of my invitations.
Oh, well, that's
because I was totally rejected after registering like 10,000 Nintendo games. Those bastards.
Yeah, did they say like what criteria they like? Do they know you run Negative World or anything?
I don't think that. I think it probably just they went to Club Nintendo and just random. I'm sure there was some random element. I mean, probably people who purchased a lot of stuff, but they didn't have. It wasn't a huge event, so they probably had to just, you know, they took a pool of like 500 people who purchased a lot of stuff and then randomly pick names or something. That's mm-hmm. my best
like,
guess.
I was actually trying to figure this out because I was pretty offended, but but I would guess that they pick people who have a lot of people playing around them because you get to bring four people, right, or three people. So maybe they pick people who like game with groups so they could try out the Wii U kind of local multiplayer stuff.
Okay. All right.
I guess so, but most of my surveys, I just put like one or, you know, when they say how many people in your household play this game, it was always like one or two.
God damn it. Know. Maybe they just picked really tall people.
I don't know.
That's probably it.
That's all I got left.
All right. So just like walk us through the event. So like step by step, what happened? Like, so you get there and do you have to sign in or?
Well, you get there and there's like 800 women outside and it's confusing. Because you think it's going to be all men, and then it turns out they were there for some private event, and we have no idea what was going on.
Although I think some of them might have had 3DSs, so maybe it was like a private girls
maybe
night
they, out. Yeah, private girl gamer Nintendo thing, I don't know. But yeah, you go in, you have to sign, and they give you your little thing to wear around your neck.
Lanyard, yeah, with a little card that you can scan in and have pictures posted to Facebook and stuff.
And... Yeah, then you just go in and you get to play whatever you feel like. There was no, I mean, they kind of hyped it up like so much. Like when you come in, they're all like screaming, like, come on, make some noise. And they're like, all the Nintendo people.
You had to high five everyone on the way in. It was like coming into a basketball game or something.
I think if I knew like that there were going to be like some big lines on certain games, like neither of us got to play Zombie U because there was kind of like always like four or five people in line. And it was one of the longer demos too, it seemed. Like people would play like 10 minutes straight.
Okay.
So I think if I knew that, I would just like ran right to that unit. But
did you guys only have like a certain amount of time like that your...
Yeah,
you guys
we were supposed to get 2 hours, but then they kicked us out after like an hour and 40 minutes or 45 minutes or something.
Oh, really?
Unbeknownst to us. They're like, wow, they went by really quick. And it actually was quicker. But it was fun. I mean, like, overall, my overall impressions were like, when I reflect back on it, everything was pretty much exactly like what I expected. Because, you know, you look at the E3 coverage and you see read so many articles about it. And I don't think anything really wowed me, like graphics-wise or play-wise. Everything was pretty much exactly like I expected. But that said, it was all fun. Like, yeah, I had fun with the games there, and I'm looking forward to a bunch of them. And one of the games that was more fun than I thought it might be was New Super Mario Brothers U.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So like, what was surprising about that for you?
It wasn't surprising, really. It was just that it's like five players, right? So you have four like Mario-type characters on the screen, and then you have one guy on the touchpad who helps everybody slash hinders everybody. So it was my goal to just kill all of the other players and prevent them from reaching the finish line by blocking.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So you can actually tap the screen, and pretty much I just played it like an asshole, like usually. You can tap the screen, and it's called boost mode, and you can create four blocks at one time, and it's really quick and responsive. So you can just like make a wall above somebody's head when they're jumping over a pit, or you can block them off by putting a block in front of them or a row of blocks in front of them.
You know, I've been really wanting like a game like this to have online so that I could like play with you guys, but maybe now I don't want that.
Yeah, you probably. I don't think this will be online, actually. Like,
this one definitely is not.
I don't even think Nintendo Land will be online, even though it's a game that's like so geared towards multiplayer.
That would be awful. I would hope so.
I mean, if it was, don't you think they would have said something by now?
Unless they're still trying to get it working or something. Yeah, I think they would have said something. Plus, that game, one of the things that worries me about the Wii U in general is that they're focusing so much on that local multiplayer, asymmetrical multiplayer thing that a lot of people are not going to be able to appreciate that because they won't have enough people around to actually play that stuff.
The thing is, a lot of people like us won't, which, and you know, we're the ones who like care the most,
Jealous.
So to speak. Yeah. But like for families, which is, you know, something that they care about quite a bit. You know, people with kids who play games and everything. I mean,
yeah, for that kind of stuff, it'll be totally amazing. Like, if I was a kid and I had this system, it would be the best thing ever. And yeah. So with the Wii, I mean, even with four controller ports or whatever.
So what? So was this the first time for either of you actually holding the Wii U gamepad?
Yeah.
So how did it? You know, how
it's
did it
very
feel
like? Light. Everyone who says it's light is completely correct. It's very light. It doesn't feel uncomfortable. Like, when you see it, you think it's going to be uncomfortable, but it just feels nice. Hmm. Like, I don't really have it. The only thing is, like, it's big, and that's not an issue necessarily, but some of the games, like, kind of have you hold it sideways with one hand and, like, flick with the other, and then you're holding this, like, big thing. It's not heavy, but it's just this big thing you're holding with one hand. But I mean, I didn't have any problems with it. It's really, I think it's nice, like, to hold. It's very comfortable.
Yeah, it pretty much feels exactly like I expected it would. No real surprises. And it was very, you know, it was nice. I liked it. The only drawbacks that it had to me, I thought, were one thing is that, like he was saying, like, there was the Takamaru's Ninja Castle game where you have to flick Shuriken out when you're holding it sideways, you know?
Uh-huh.
And that was a little uncomfortable for me because you have to hold the thing with one hand and you're actually aiming with a gyroscope. So it doesn't have a pointer, you know, like the camera that the Wiimote has.
Right,
equipped it.
Right.
It doesn't have that. Instead, everything's like gyroscope aiming, like Skyward Sword. So yeah. Everything's going to have to be, yeah, calibrated and stuff like that. And if your calibration's off, it's going to be screwy, like Wii Sports Resort or something.
You know, so that, I actually, when I just played Skyward Sword recently, and, you know, I loved the pointing, you know, based on, you say it's just the gyro that does it, right?
Right, yeah.
Because I don't know, it just, because it was, I love the idea of pointer controls. I mean, I like, will never play another shooter with just sticks again, but I don't like, you know, when it like jerks around and stuff.
There's definitely limitations to that, like when it loses the infrared signal or something, then you're kind of screwed.
Right. So I don't know, the navigating the menus with in Skyward Sword with just using the gyro, it was super comfortable. I liked it a lot.
I like it in theory, but it's a little jankier to me and a little less smooth. And the other thing is that, you know, like when you take out your bow in like Wii Sports Resort, wherever you initialize the thing, that's your starting point. So
sure.
You can be holding it straight up. So that's kind of goofy also, because you can kind of, you know, if you don't do it correctly, then
the great thing in Skyward Sword was you always had that down button to just recenter the cursor.
Right, and we'll have that too, but isn't that kind of like a hindrance? You know, like, it's kind of unintuitive, right, to have to do that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it sort of makes you aware that you're not having like a one-to-one relationship with the in-game action, but I don't know. I think there's a certain functionality that I'd be willing to trade that off for, so.
I mean, best case scenario that it works perfectly and you're fine and you can move around 360 degrees and you can't do that with just pointer. And that, you know, that if it works well, then that's fine. But sure. I'm just afraid that we'll run into those situations where it doesn't quite match up. And the game right. Where you had to hold the whole pad with your left hand and sort of flick shurikens out, it had two weaknesses to me. One was that it was kind of hard to aim just with you had to aim with the entire controller, right?
Uh-huh.
So you're moving around a cursor by holding this big tablet in your hand, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one thing. And the other thing is that, you had to flick on the screen, and you know people made a big, like, they were always carping about capacitive versus resistant touchscreen.
Yes, I was going to ask you about that.
And the cheapness of Nintendo and why they went with resistive. I think for tapping and small motions, resistive is totally fine. But for something like flicking a shuriken with a touchscreen, that uh-huh. kind of thing, capacitive is a lot better for, because you can just, like, your finger just slides across the glass. But in this case, you had to actually apply some pressure, which also made it hard to aim, I thought.
Well, I was going to ask, do you, Is it purely just aiming with the hardware, and then it just registers a flick, or is there some like directionality to
yes,
like,
so
how
this,
you flick?
That's a good question. I was totally curious about that too. I thought maybe you just hold it straight and then just flick whatever direction you want.
Uh huh.
But it wasn't actually like that. It was actually like a cursor that you're moving around by moving the tablet. And as far as I know, the tablet motion only controlled the speed, not the actual direction of it. Right, Andrew?
Okay.
Yeah, I think, I mean, when you're flicking, I think, yeah, it's just speed.
Yeah, like, ideally, I would rather have had the tablet just pointing at the TV and had really precise control and been able to flick at different angles or something like that.
That would probably be difficult for that'd be easier for a game where, you know, you have left, right, middle or something.
Yeah, I mean, they would have to simplify it a little bit, but I think that might be a little more fun, you know, for flicking.
And am I mistaken in, I thought I saw that, like, depending on how you could, like, tilt the gamepad and that could put, like, arc on the...
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. All right. So, and did you find yourself, like, using that, or is it just sort of a non-issue, or what?
I'm sure you could use it, but we only had, like, one time to play for everything.
Okay.
Times. And, so you could, like, give it a little spin by tilting the pad, but that wasn't the most intuitive thing in the world. Like, like how much do you tilt versus how much does it spin? But I'm sure there'll be, like, mini games in it or something that you'll have to curve around something. That could be.
Yeah, I mean, that would be, that's what I was kind of getting at. I mean, if there was that kind of mechanic in the game, I think that'd be pretty fun.
But. Like Wii Bowling. So all the games are going to have, I think, multiple modes, and they'll all have one-player modes and stuff. So some of the other Nintendo Land stuff was, like, there was this same game called Donkey Kong's Crash Course. Mm. Donkey Kong Crash Course. Which is the hardest fucking game, like, in existence. Like, it was harder than F-Zero, harder than Ghouls and Ghosts. Like, basically, you just...
I don't know about that, but...
It is, dude. It's so hard. Like, it was embarrassing. I died, like, right after the first checkpoint. I lost all my lives.
Well, I think it has... It's definitely, like, you have to learn the courses.
Yeah, and it was very sensitive. Like, so, essentially, you move around a little cart by tilting it through Donkey Kong sort of looking courses. It didn't really have much to do with Donkey Kong, but it was like you move a car with tilt control, and the functionality is supposed to be you look at the pad for the close up stuff, but then you could see the whole thing on the screen, and it was pretty fun, but like really ridiculously hard. Like I couldn't believe how hard it was for a Nintendo game.
Well, what was like the objective? Like what were you having trouble accomplishing?
The objective is to make it to the end of the maze, and there's checkpoints and those little things you have to go across, and it was just hard not to destroy your cart by going too fast or flipping over while you were.
Okay.
So it was all just like finesse or something.
Okay, and is it like timed? Like you probably have to reach the end.
You had lives for sure. I don't know about times, but you could run out of lives. And I did like right after the first checkpoint, which was embarrassing. And then they also had Luigi's Ghost Mansion. Like,
that was fun.
That was fun.
Could you please spend the next 10 minutes awkwardly explaining?
We
totally will.
It's basically like you have the up to four players are searching for the ghost, so they're just looking at the main screen. And then the person who is the ghost has the touch screen. So the people on the screen, they have no idea where the ghost is, but you could kind of, when he's getting closer, you feel the rumble in your controller. And you could also kind of tell by like, just if you see, him attack someone else, then you know where they are and you try to, head them off. Like it's kind of like a maze. So like you'd say, oh, one person go up, one person go to the right and try to like get the ghost cornered. So if the ghost grabs you from behind, he could kill you. If he kills all the players, then you're just done. Mm-hmm.
So it was actually really fun. It was essentially like Pac-Man versus kind of.
And ghost wins. But if you can use your, you have like a Ghostbusters, like flashlight. Whatever they're called, vacuums or whatever. If you could use that on the ghost, if you get his health down from 100 to 0, then the players win. So yeah, it's kind of like, just trying to find out where he is.
Mm-hmm.
So it was one of those asymmetrical multiplayer. It's kind of like Pac-Man versus, except you can attack the other people at any time as long as their back is turned. So if you get the drop on them, you can like drag them off somewhere and you can kill them essentially, and their partners can revive them. I mean, it doesn't really require 10 minutes of explanation, but it was just a lot of fun. Like the characters move really slowly, but it was a great usage of asymmetrical multiplayer, I thought. And there was another game called Animal Crossing Sweet Something, which we didn't get to play, which I actually also wanted to play, which is a similar kind of idea.
I've heard people like that one quite a bit, though I don't know all that much about it.
That's sort of the same way, except the person with the gamepad controls two, hunter characters with each control stick, and then the other players are trying to collect fruit and not get caught by him. So
okay.
it's sort of a similar idea. I guess there was one more game? Was that it?
I guess that was Zelda game. There was a Zelda game where like up to four people control swords and they're in front. And it just kind of moves you automatically along the path. And at first you're just randomly hitting, but later it has more like Skyward Sword where you have to hit it from a certain angle. Like the enemies have those you could see a line on them that shows what angle you have to hit. And then the person with the touchpad, which was Anand, was shooting arrows, I guess, into the backs of all the people with swords. I guess that's how the game works.
I was shooting arrows into the backs of your heads.
Okay, I don't think that's what you're supposed to be doing, but...
I mean, I actually asked her before we started, I was like, theoretically, if I was to accidentally hit somebody in the back of the head with an arrow, would that do anything? She's like, no, it wouldn't. But it did. She was totally lying.
Oh, liar.
But yeah, I thought that was pretty fun, too. We didn't make it to the end, because, cooperation in Chicago, it's not really a Chicago thing, cooperation.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah, we're pretty rough here.
You have you even have a word for it, right? Griefing?
Yeah.
That's his word. I'm going to grief him so bad.
Yeah.
But yes, so that game was actually fun because the person with the arrows could like take out people in towers and stuff, and the people on the ground were like playing like a Wii Sports Resort kind of thing. So that was, those were five events from the 12 events of Nintendo Land. I think Nintendo Land will be really fun. The only worry I have again is that it'll be hard to get like five people together to play Luigi's Ghost House or Mansion or whatever.
Sure.
Other than that, everything is, yeah.
Because if you only had like two people, that wouldn't be nearly as much fun, right?
I'm pretty sure you can get computer players to help you out. I'm pretty sure you can play any of them one player, but it wouldn't be nearly as fun.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, because you kind of need to coordinate, and I don't know how well the computers would coordinate, but...
Go, computer three, go.
It'd be kind of cool if you could control them like bots or something like that. Like, but also, there was a Game & Wario there, which is kind of another minigame collection. I didn't really play that, but Andrew played a little.
I don't really know what the... I only played one game, which was like a skiing game, and... You just kind of hold the touchpad, and you see on the touchpad you're skiing, and you just kind of tilt it. Like, it was okay for a mini game, but I kind of wish they'd just do like a real Wario where this was more like this mini game took like 20, 30 seconds, and I guess this is just a collection of mini games like this, but.
I'm sure WarioWare is coming eventually because there'll be so many ideas for it. But yeah, these were a little longer, and the game in that looked pretty fun, I thought, which I didn't get to try because the whole event was mobbed. There was like a sniper scope mode, you know, where basically you have like a bunch of criminals that you have to identify, and you have a building full of people, and you just zoom in with the gamepad and sort of focus on them and you know, take a picture or whatever. That actually looked really fun, but I didn't get to play that. And there was also P100, which Andrew got to play and I didn't.
Yeah, P100 is the first game I played. I like it. I didn't really get used to the controls until I was like 75% through the, well, not through the demo, but until, you know, 75% through my time until I died. So I wasn't really getting the hang of it till later on, but you have, you know, a whole group of heroes that follow you. You draw a little, things on the touchpad to make them go into certain like modes. Like you can make a fist, and then once you draw it, you don't have to keep drawing it. That's like your special attack. So like you could draw the fist, and then you could go up and keep punching, and then you say, "Oh, I want the sword." So you draw the sword, and all your people turn into a big sword every time you hit your power button. And there was also a gun, so you could do like from farther back attacks. That there were also like group attacks that were separate from that. I didn't really totally understand that. And you could also just individually run up and just like hit them yourself with individual attacks. So it had a lot of variety for how you're attacking them. There was the enemies I faced weren't that tough. It was just kind of basic bosses, but.
And every area was rated like Beautiful Joe, kind of like.
Yeah. And when you go into your defensive mode, you turn to Jell-O for some reason, which is interesting.
So it looks kind of like Pikmin, but it plays like an action game, it seems like. And
you know, yeah, it's not like Pikmin-esque at all. When I first saw it, and I don't think anyone ever did a good job explaining this, but like you don't have as much control over the individual characters. Like it's not like Pikmin where you're throwing certain people this way, certain people that way. It's more like you just create this group, and I guess the more you get in your group, the more you're able to do. And so you create, you know, you could turn into a big sword or whatever with them. And maybe there is like more individual stuff I didn't realize, but I don't think it was very much like an RTS or anything like that.
And Joe, are you familiar with Platinum Games? They're the ones that are making it.
No, I mean, that's like the big draw about, that's why everyone's like a buzz about this game, right?
I don't think they've really made a bad game that I know of. And a lot of the games are really excellent, especially action games. And this is being made by Hideki Kamiya, who also made Beautiful Joe, Okami, and, Bayonetta and stuff like that. So I'm totally pumped for this. This is like a definite pickup for me, even though I didn't get to play it.
Did they give any sort of release window for that game? Like, is that supposed to be like a launch title? Or
I was asking about that. They kept saying like launch. They were saying this year, but I don't think the people who are manning the booths actually have the inside detail on that stuff.
You know? I think they were just hired to work a booth. They don't know.
But I think it probably will come out soon because I don't think they really talked about many games that are next year or anything like that.
That's true.
And they also had Wii Fit U there, which, you know, not really much needs to be said about that. It had a bunch of mini games, and if it's cheap enough, then I'll buy it for the mini games, just like I bought Wii Fit Plus.
Were people, lined up playing that?
No, but they had competitions throughout the event, so, like, they would call 10 people over, and I kept entering the competitions and then losing them, and that would waste all my time, so I didn't get to play any actual games.
Uh-huh.
We didn't play Ninja Gaiden and Batman Arkham City, which were also there. We played Sing, but the less said about that, the better. That game seems awful. I mean, I was awful also when I was playing it, but it's
it?
Like,
I mean, it's just a karaoke game, but you can.
It's karaoke,
lyrics,
but without
right?
any sort of like grading or anything, and there's like a right. huge lag, or at least there was there, like a second and a half between what you sing and you know when it actually comes out of the speakers, and I don't understand why that game exists. Games.
Well, is it? Do you use a mic on the controller or a separate microphone?
No, it's a separate wireless mic, and Nintendo's publishing this too, and they're also publishing P100.
There is a mic on the. Gamepad though, right?
There is, but I think you have to use a wireless mic. I don't know if the gamepad mic what the quality is, but I'm guessing it wouldn't be that high quality.
I mean, does anyone really? I mean, you're doing in-home karaoke. Is it really like that big of a deal? The audio quality? I don't know.
Yeah, kind of. I mean,
maybe I'm not familiar with the world of in-home karaoke enough to judge.
Unless you want everything to sound like you're going through Double Dribble or something like that. Yeah.
I think it was just funny that this Nintendo rep spent like 2 minutes explaining how like, oh, you know, a lot of other games, they're all about competing, but this game's really just about sitting down and having fun. And like at the end of his explanation, I was thinking, well, he just made a long explanation to try to explain why it's somehow better to have no options in your game.
And also instead of being able to pick the DLC tracks you actually want, it's probably just going to come with like some random grab bag assortment of like, I didn't even know two of the three songs they had there.
Well, those are popular dance songs.
I guess they are. Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm not going to be too pumped because of I don't know. That doesn't seem very promising. Even, I don't know why Nintendo's publishing it, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Did we cover everything that we played? And they also had hot dogs, which weren't that good because they didn't really have much.
There was also Rayman Legends.
Oh, yeah. That was pretty good.
It seemed pretty fun. The only part I played was the kind of rhythm part you've probably seen in the trailers. And my brother was doing the touchpad stuff. So I don't know what he was doing, but he was trying to do stuff along with the beat. And I guess it helped me out in some fashion. And I was just cruising through the areas. So it was fun, but that's pretty much all I played. I do think like I was watching, Anand. Were you playing with my brother or someone else? I forget.
I was playing with a couple people, yeah. And yeah. I had the gamepad also. And like in the other levels, like you can cut ropes and there's just tons of stuff you can do on the gamepad. It's actually pretty fun.
Yeah, it seems like they're doing a lot more with the gamepad than like new Super Mario's. Like there's actually a lot. Like there would be some part where someone would go into an area with spikes and the person with the gamepad would have to like turn it so like.
Yeah, like rotate a platform. Yeah, that game was almost too easy to be really evil with. Like you could really just dump somebody in the lava just at will. If you wanted to.
I'm not sure, though, what they're going to do for those sections if you're just playing single player or something, but...
Well, here's what, and when they port it to other platforms, here's what I thought was interesting about what they said about the... everyone was thinking, is it exclusive? Is it not exclusive? When they introduced those levels at E3, they said, here's some maps that support this mode or something like that. So I don't know if it's going to be every level or if they have specific stuff.
Oh, it's just like a extra co-op thing or something.
I'm thinking it's just like some of the levels are going to be like that. Maybe you'll have some control over the other levels and just be able to do small things. But I don't think every level will be geared towards that because I don't think it'll be exclusive either. Even though making it exclusive might be a good idea. I don't know. Sometimes exclusives sell a lot because
at least,
of association.
It sounds like a timed exclusive, right?
Probably.
Watch them like a month before Wii U comes out. Like, oh, and we have other versions coming next year.
Yeah.
It's smart glass.
Yeah.
I don't
know. Yeah, that was actually pretty funny.
So, but you're saying you think it might be like entirely different, like levels that aren't the core game? Is that what you were guessing on it?
My guess is that the ones that are really heavy into touchpad integration are going to be a selection of the total levels. Because also, like Andrew was saying with one player, what would you do in that situation, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, there was. I mean, unless you just had some like fake computer AI that moved it for you or something, like there was a lot of stuff that you really needed like the second player interaction for.
And also, very, very few things are made without the notion of portability, like porting to other platforms these days, which is kind of unfortunate because that means things don't get stuff that's specifically chosen for them. But, you know, regardless, that game was pretty fun, I thought. It looked really beautiful, and that's definitely, like, I'm sure it's like a guaranteed very good game that's coming out.
And final game was Pikmin 3, which I was, like, super excited to play, but I played the 7-minute, like, the demo was you either got to pick, like, a basic stage, go, like, collect stuff, fight people, or a boss. So I picked the stage. It said 7 minutes. I swear I didn't use up 7 minutes, but I was just going through the stage collecting stuff. It was basic Pikmin, like nothing too new. And then I like unlocked the rock Pikmin. And I was like, finally, I get to do something new. And like 2 seconds later, it just says game over. And I don't know if I ran out of time. I don't think so. I don't think I played 7 minutes or if I died somehow or what.
But Andrew, that was like, Andrew got skunked by a Bulborb.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the game was fun. And it was the first time I got, because I played on the GameCube. So it was the first time I got to use like the Wii Remote controls where you're pointing to, you know, where you want to throw Pikmin. And that worked really nicely. I just wish I got to play more. I wanted to try out those Rock Pikmin. So, like, the stuff I did play was really, I mean, collect some items laying around in an area, fight a couple basic enemies. Like, it was stuff I've already done before, you know?
Like, you know, everyone kept asking about the graphics afterward. And honestly, while I was at the event, I really didn't think about it a single time. Like, everything just looked pleasant and, well, and, you know, decent enough. Nothing really amazed me.
When that question comes up, you have to wonder, like, what TVs are they using? Did they actually bother to, like, get the TV set up?
Of course it's
going to
be high definition, though, at least, right? Because they want to present stuff in the best
way. Well, yeah, but, I mean, were they using junky TV? And then even when you have a high definition TV, like, you have to get it set up correctly. Like, so a lot of games I saw, they seemed like, I mean, I don't know, like, they didn't seem, like, impressive graphically. They just kind of existed, you know?
Yeah, nothing really impressed me except for, I mean, Pikmin looked nice, but Pikmin always looks nice, even in SD. And P100 was pretty sharp, and you could see a lot of details and the little characters running around, and when they made an animation. Like, everything looked good. I didn't think anything looked bad except for the stuff that's supposed to, like Wario. And, you know, like, nothing really wowed me or anything like that, but I think it looks pretty much on the level of an HD console now. And honestly, I think the days of being super wowed by graphics are pretty much kind of past, unless you play, like, a super high-end PC game or something like that. Maybe next generation will prove me wrong, but nothing wowed me, but I thought everything looked good and pleasant, and I appreciated that, you know, they had, like, distinct art styles, and everything was nice and colorful, and it looks like a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to a lot of those games, even the ones I didn't get to play. Zombie U, I thought, looked a little generic in the little clip I saw, but
I wanted to try it, though. That's, like, the one game I wanted to play that I didn't get to play that was there.
Because that's the one game where we don't really know how it's going to play, right?
Yeah, and I mean, there's just too many people online throughout most of the event.
Yeah, and game. So we were probably the oldest people there. Or I was probably the oldest person there for sure, except for maybe some of the presenters. But I thought it was fun overall. When we came back, I think the lady might have told us we could have gone inside again to get more hot dogs and play games, but we just passed by because we were.
I don't know. I'm not sure exactly what she was saying, but
she was talking about weird hot dogs inside. I don't know, maybe some kind of like double entendre or something. But I guess we could have gone in, but we were kind of tired and full of hummus. So.
Yeah.
Was there anything that you guys think you got from the firsthand experience that maybe is not so well known to all the listeners out there who are just seeing like the, you know, the stuff that like gets filtered by the videos and the PR people and everything?
Well, you can play as a naked peach in this. Yeah, we couldn't get much like inside dirt from the actual people there because they were just hired for the event. But you know, like stuff like news, like the actual gamepad itself is super responsive, super fast. Like as opposed to the Sing microphone, which had a delay of like 2 seconds. Like when I was putting down platforms in New Super Mario Bros. U, like it was just super responsive. And you know, as soon as I tapped it, it would appear on the screen. And the pad looked really nice. The screen looked really nice. You know, the gyroscope control thing that I mentioned earlier, that I might have a problem with that later, but we'll see. But everything else, like, it was really nice, I thought, too. What do you think, Andrew?
Yeah, I think it was nice. There was one thing that kind of surprised me, although maybe it shouldn't, which is that even certain single-player games, like Game of Wario, and I'm forgetting what the other one was, but there's certain single-player games where you'd have to look at the touchscreen controller, even though I'm not sure why. Like, the game I played on Game of Wario was the skiing game, and all you really did was just tilt the controller. I think you could just as easily looked at the main TV and tilted the controller, but instead you like had to look at the touchscreen. And the there was still something going on the main TV, but it was like the reverse. And I didn't even realize you were supposed to be looking at the controller first. So like I thought I was just doing really terrible. And then the lady was like, no, you're supposed to look at the controller. And I was like, why do I have to look at the controller for a single player game where all I'm doing is tilting? You know, I'm not even using the touch screen or anything. So that was a little surprising. It was the same with the Donkey Kong game. I didn't totally understand why you had to look at the controller when you were playing that one single player instead of just the screen.
it just gave you a more detailed view. I don't think that stuff is really necessary. They're just trying to show every possible way to use the controller, I think, at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, the controller is really nice, though. It's really light. Like, I know everyone says that, so everyone probably knows that by now, but I still went in with, like, some disbelief. Like, what does light mean to these people, you know? But it's pretty light.
Which games are you looking forward to most, Joe?
Oh, me?
Yeah.
Probably New Super Mario Bros. U.
It looks fun, and the squirrel suit was fun, even though every time somebody got it, I would hit them with a little chill.
You know, I wanted to ask, it seems like when I see videos, those blocks that you set come in, like, different sizes?
Here's the thing, is that, like, you can tap it four times, then you have, like, the four sort of hands, like, the four things in a card deck, so it's, like, club, diamond, whatever. So you can have four blocks. I think if you tap them again, they become small coin blocks. And also, so the blocks, like, you can tap one. If somebody hits it with their head, it disappears. If somebody, like, jumps on it, I think it doesn't disappear. So there's a little nuance there with the blocks. And the thing about that is, like, Andrew was saying Rayman Origins, the stages we played were geared towards using the gamepad. But New Super Mario Bros. U, it was just kind of free form, which you might think it's kind of lazy in one way, but another way it's kind of cool because you can kind of just do whatever you want. You can build someone a staircase that, you know, sends them off the screen, you know? Like, you pretty much have the freedom to do whatever you want. It was pretty cool.
And you could totally grief them is what you're saying.
Totally. Even if you supposedly wanted to help them. Like, we had a time trial competition. That's what they had also. So one person was on the gamepad, one person was racing through the level. And that kind of stuff, I think, would be really fun. You know, it's the kind of make your own fun kind of freeform gameplay with New Super Mario Bros. U. And I think that game would be pretty awesome. And actually, New Super Mario Bros. 2, that Iwata asks, makes that game look pretty awesome too. And a lot of people are kind of down on that, but I think it looks really fun.
I feel a little better about that after reading the Iwata asks. I have a question for you, Joe, though. Like, do you play games with your wife?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So when you see these modes with the, you know, one player is playing the main game on the screen and one player could do, like, simpler stuff to help on the touchscreen, do you think that's appealing to you to play with her, or do you think she wouldn't get into that, or?
Well, for me, it's very appealing, but, like, I really want to do the boost mode. Like, I don't know why, but I just, like, I want to do that almost entirely, probably until I get bored with it. So I would be totally cool with her just, you know, she could just play, like, any normal Mario game. You know, she wouldn't have to learn anything new, so to speak, and then I could just kind of, like, facilitate the experience. You know, like, that I think would be really fun for me.
It is fun. Yeah. Like, any time we got the chance to use the gamepad instead of the controller, I pretty much took the gamepad. I mean, one was because I hadn't used it, but another is kind of the novelty of it. And I think that novelty will be there for a while because it's fun to, like, try different things on the gamepad, and it's nice and responsive. And I don't know if they have some kind of technology in there to stream super quickly wirelessly, but it works really well. And it's fun. And boost mode is fun too.
And, like, I just, like, I would be so happy because I am always trying to, you know, obviously we all like local multiplayer, right? I mean, it's always fun. As we've said, it's tough to sort of get people together. And I think a lot of times when you do, you have such differing skill levels in the room that can be kind of an obstacle. Like, there are a good number of games where if I invited people over, I just wouldn't suggest certain games because it just wouldn't be fun for them because they would just be languishing, you know, like they would have to, I'm not going to like tell them like, give them a homework assignment, like go play this game for 8 hours and then come back tomorrow or something, you know? So, to me, anything that would, where I could just like help someone, where I could like, we could experience playing the game together, but they wouldn't have to go through necessarily that learning process first, or, you know, just somehow I could be there to like help, you know, like what's it called in Mario Galaxy where you have player
Sidekick player,
something like that. Yeah. And so yeah, like that worked really well for my wife and I, and we would like take turns with that.
And those kind of situations are also playing with kids. That kind of stuff is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think playing with my nieces and nephews, it would definitely, although I don't know if I'd want to let them hold the really possibly expensive to replace touchscreen controller.
It didn't feel that expensive. I guess it's a big touchscreen.
Yeah.
But so what's your excitement level for everybody on the Wii U as of right now?
7.9.
Exactly.
I don't think mine changed after the event. I was pretty excited, and I'm still pretty excited, and I'm going to pick it up at launch, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, for me, I think what might be more informative question that I can ask you guys is, how was your excitement compared to like your first experiences with the Wii?
To be honest, like the Wii made more sense to me. It's like, this is like, I actually still think motion controls are like an important step forward for controls. And I really don't want, like, some people are like, oh, Nintendo's done with that now, let's move on. Like, I think they should keep moving forward with the motion controls. And they are, you know, a lot of these games have like motion controls.
I think
they will. Too.
I think it's great to hear that like Pikmin 3 controls best with the Wiimote and Nunchuck. Like, if that's.
But that's not because of motion controls, right? It's just because of the pointer.
The pointer. Well, yeah, but I mean, there's going to be motion stuff too.
Like, what I'm saying is, I like the fact that they would be open to whatever control scheme is best for the game. So if motion controls would lend itself best to something, I wouldn't want them to say, oh, but we've got to push the gamepad. You know?
Yeah, I actually hope that they would use this opportunity to just ditch non-Wii Motion Plus forever, but it seems like they're not doing that. You know.
Oh, no, still, you don't think going forward the all Wii U games that use it would be Motion Plus?
I don't think so, no. Because if it's a game that requires like four players, or it has four players or more or something, I don't think they'll require it if it's not totally necessary.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know about that. I mean, did it seem like, though, that the controllers there were Wii Motion Plus? Like,
I'm sure they were. Every controller is Motion Plus now, but could you tell with the Zelda game? Did it feel just like Wii Sports?
Well, that's the thing. They had the parts where you had to aim like really specific, and I guess that's possible without the Wii Motion Plus, but it really reminded me of like the Skyward Sword type, like slashing, you know, really specific angles. But
yeah, I mean,
I don't know. Maybe it was not Motion Plus. I have no idea.
They could definitely require it. I just thought I remembered reading somewhere that it wasn't required. But they could require it for certain games for sure. I'm just sort of afraid that they won't keep pushing the Motion Plus technology because maybe not everyone has it. It depends. If they include one in the box at least, then maybe they'll keep pushing it.
I would hope they do. I mean, they're launching a new platform. It's usually not unreasonable. You know, in the past, certainly, that you would have to buy all new controllers. Here, at least, you have sort of the option. If you bought them previously, you don't have to, but I would think it wouldn't be too much to expect people, if they didn't have Motion Plus controllers, to go out and get them. Plus, aren't we always usually saying how companies just want to, like, sell anything they can, like, take any opportunity to...
I just hope there's an AC adapter in that box. otherwise I'm a pretty unhappy kid.
That'd be hilarious.
Yeah, but I definitely feel like the Wii made more sense to me, and, like, the touchscreen's cool, but it's like I've played touchscreen games. So I guess I'm not as excited as this for this console, but I'm still pretty excited. And the event kind of, like, on end, like, it was sort of like I was excited before. I'm still excited. I don't think it made me more excited, but it didn't make me less either. It was just kind of what I expected.
Like, Wii Sports Resort, Wii Sports, the first Wii Sports, I thought that was, like, that pretty much bowled me over. Like, I thought that was incredible the first time I played it. And nothing that I played here felt like that sort of revolution. And not much after Wii Sports felt like that sort of revolution on the Wii, even. So I don't think it had the same effect on me as playing Wii Sports, but maybe that's not important. It gave me a little bit of novelty. And even though it's technology that's been around for a while, they're using it in some novel ways that really haven't been used much before. So I'm down with that for a while. Anything that gives me a new way to play and support me.
Gotcha. All right. Well, that all sounds pretty cool. And thank you both for sharing your experiences. I think we're about out of time for this podcast. So I would like to encourage everyone listening, if they'd like to comment on what you've heard, go over to negativeworld.org. Simply find the thread associated with this episode and post your thoughts. You can reach us through our Facebook page. Simply search for negativeworld.org. Or you can reach us on Twitter @negative_world. I encourage everyone to subscribe to the podcast and, of course, the enhanced version if you would like. Thank you, Anand and Andrew, for doing this with me. Thank you for supporting me on this first solo flight hosting of mine. I hope it went okay. And I would encourage everyone who's out there listening to get involved and join us on a future podcast recording. As you can see, it is not that scary. And So I really appreciate the time for both of you. Thanks for joining me, and I guess I will see everyone in 2 weeks.
Oh, and real quick, at the end of the last podcast, I hyped a new site feature that I thought was going to be out soon, and it's still not out, but it should be coming pretty soon.
Okay.
So look forward to new site feature that's going to be, I think, a lot of fun for the type of people into this kind of thing, which I'm not revealing what it is yet.
Awesome. Look forward to Backlog Us to come participate, and also the DS Retro Game Club of Moon, and come to the boards.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks again, both of you guys, and we'll see y'all later.
See ya.
Later.
wonder where the term spam originated from.
Yeah, because what does it have to do with, like, low-quality meat, right?
I don't know, but maybe it's like a portmanteau or something else. You know, portmanteau is when you join two words together into one new word? Like backwards. Email. Yeah, I don't know.
Sucky email.
Oh, email, something email, yeah. Mail.
Yeah, but it doesn't, it's not spemale, though.